Welcome aboard, everyone. This is The Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis. Justin Kaufman in today as Ro is off again today.
Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here, Justin. Yeah. And wow, what a day. What a lot of news in the world and information to absorb. And we have a great show coming up.
We do. Coming up, the new finance chair for the city council, Alderman Scott Wagespach from the 32nd Ward, will be in studio to talk with us about what happened today at city council and the job that's in front of him.
Right. Taking over the reins from one of the most powerful members of city council for decades, Alderman Burke.
It's amazing to me, Anna, that you have, not only does he take over as the most from one of the most powerful aldermen, but he's also the 32nd Ward alderman, who, that's where Dan Rostenkowski made that ward famous. He has been a progressive and a reformer who has been who finds himself sandwiched between some of the Chicago greats, at least the Chicago machine greats of the past. It's just interesting to me that Scott Wagespach continues to find himself compared, or at least parallels to some of the big names of Chicago politics.
And a dissenter, a voice of dissent on council when no one was really listening. Now this reform agenda, boom, is front and center. Wow. This mayor has made it clear, this ambitious agenda, 100 days of reform-minded ideas that she wants council to pass, including taking away some of their own powers that they will then have to vote on. The aldermanic prerogative and the zoning, that she says there's no reason why we need 50 different rules and 50 different wards for zoning. Yeah. The aldermen say, no, we know best about our, no, not all of them, but some of them say we know best about what's going on in our ward and we want to keep that power. Certainly has been rife for abuse, and that's some of what we've seen in these recent indictments, that particular power it has been abused
in
the past.
There was so much made today at the city council meeting that this was going to be a council that was going to test the new mayor.
Oh, yeah.
She's going to come into these aldermen, and it's going to be like a snake pit. They're going to get her. And all that Alderman Ed Burke could do, because she was so prepared, and she had used her time as a lawyer, but also as I read up that she had studied parliamentary procedure. She was ready to be the person in charge of city council today. All he could get on was mistakes in the actual, pronoun mistakes in the ordinances that were being brought up. I just find that to be ridiculous. And she did a great job of saying, you're wrong, as sort of defending herself. But it's just an amazing moment of Chicago politics that the big lightning, the thunder and lightning that we thought was going to happen was over a pronoun.
Well, and the that part of it was sort of what? But she called that out for what it was. She said, I find it sort of interesting that you, of all people, would bring that up given your history.
So good. And we can shot him down. Humiliated him.
She really did.
She humiliated, and because that was his intent. His intent was to
disrupt her.
You're making mistakes in these ordinances. You're not as powerful as I am. I know the rules. And she came in, she shot him down. Another big win for Lori Lightfoot.
She even said, sit down, and when I want to hear from you, I will call upon you. It was a moment, and I know we're going to talk to Ben Bradley a little more about that, and Alderman Scott Wagespach as well, who will be taking over the powerful finance chair position, and what he wants to do for the city, and how many of these reforms are actually going to get done, what they're about, what it'll mean for us.
What a day.
It is. It really is. It's a day, I got to say. I'm not sure I saw happening in my lifetime in Chicago, and I actually think it will be a good thing for all of us to have someone who is putting the people first, and not just in her rhetoric but in her actions.
There's a long way to go,
and we'll see. There's a long way to go.
But what a promising start for the new mayor in Chicago.
Well said. Okay, who else do we have on the show? Let's talk about it. Alex Panko, I think, is going to be an exciting guest. He wants to tell you, our listeners, his story, and what a story it is. He did make it to the summit of Everest this deadly week, and 11 deaths so far this year. Just a horrific thing that's happening there, and all of the ideas about why this happened. He has an idea about what should happen now.
Well, yesterday,
an experienced climber.
On the stream yesterday, we talked to someone from Brooklyn Boulders, and there was a conversation, and the guest was so good because he talked to us, and we learned something, that it was about, maybe it wasn't necessarily about Tibet, or Nepal, this idea that maybe the government was putting too many permits to get onto the mountain, but more about the different guides.
Yeah.
The guides that are going up, and these companies that will take anybody, and they're for hire and money, and Alex's story Murray, it's very similar.
It is.
He looks at that could be bigger problem than the idea of how many people are on the mountain. It's about how these companies are easily bribed to be able to get inexperienced climbers up on these.
The cut rate, cut corners kind of guide companies that I didn't realize were in existence. I thought that I know people spend a lot of money in order to reach the summit of Everest, that was an endeavor that took not only a lot of time and studying and research and, you know, getting your body ready for that experience, but it was expensive. But it turns out some people, there truly are inexperienced climbers who are being pushed to the summit.
I can't wait to talk with him, just because I didn't know as well. The hardest part is not the summit, it's not the way up, it's the way down. Talking about the descent and dead zones and the accidents and a lot of the incidents that we're now being that we're finding out about, the deaths that are on Mount Everest, a lot of it are on about the descent down.
And Alex Panko can tell us about the decisions made by his reputable guide company and why that likely kept the members of his team alive. So
great, we got a Chicagoan who can tell us first account of what was happening on Mount Everest.
And really saw some horrific things as well, too. So we'll talk to him. And then we've got a top five of five you won't believe. We've got Renato Mariotti. We'll talk about what Mueller said today. Bob Mueller saying, I don't want to testify. I've said everything I need to say. And there it is. And it's all there in front of you. But that one sentence he said is now being run in all kinds of different directions. If we had confidence the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so.
I love that that's our third story, Anna. That's the idea of what Robert Mueller talking in front of the press and the nation to say, listen, we didn't charge him not because he was innocent. It's because the Department of Justice doesn't charge presidents with crimes.
Right.
That's your job, Congress. That's what he said, opening up the door for impeachment. That's the third thing we're talking
about. But then
about.
There are those who say, hey, you're a prosecutor. You had a team of legal minds, the greatest legal minds in the country, and millions of dollars and resources. You should have either come up with an answer. Do you have, is there enough evidence or not? I mean, so there's a couple of sides to that. And we want to ask Renato Mariotti if we can break open the parking meter deal for the city of Chicago, if that really legally could ever be done, because some aldermen are now suggesting that. We'll talk about that. Elizabeth Alfano, you know her from WGN Radio. She is our favorite vegan, and she's going to be doing newsaroos with us, and that'll be fun.
And Pucks in Prague. We've got qualifications. You can be qualified to be part of to win a trip to see the Blackhawks in the Czech Republic. How awesome is that? It's a full show, Anna. It's
full,
a full show.
Total show. And there is Game of Thrones news. Kit Harington checked into rehab. Do you guys hear about this? Lauren, were you on top? It's so sad. I love him as an actor. I know he's got a huge future ahead of him. It's interesting how the actors were dealing with the show coming to an end. You saw Emilia Clarke go through things herself, and now you see him going through it. And you would think this would be the moment in an actor's life where everything is just going well, right? You never could have expected this kind of success.
Yeah. Right. Well, if you watch the documentary that HBO put out last week, in just seeing how emotional he was on his last set, I was very shocked, but it was also very gratifying to know that he really valued his job there and his position. So I guess I can. It makes a little bit more sense that this is happening.
Well, he lived that character for so many years and rode this incredible ride along with other actors that he spent so much time with, and then. But there's a lot more to that story, so we'll recircle back and talk about that as well. We're going to break here because Ben Bradley is on the other side of this break from WGN-TV. So we'll find out what's happening bottom of the hour in the news with Kim Gordon.
Anna, fireworks at Mayor Lightfoot's first city council meeting today, and they weren't the celebratory type.
The Sox get in the ring with KC, and this fight's guaranteed to go 9. White Sox Royals tonight at 7, WGN-TV's Sports.
Nice. From WGN-TV's Ben Bradley now. Have you ever seen a city council meeting quite like this in your lifetime, Ben? Or covered one? And I have to put your microphone up. There you
Hello,
are.
Hello, guys.
Hello, Ben.
You know, a lot of people saying, uh-oh, are we going to in store for council wars? And I don't think that's the case, but this is certainly the first time since council wars that Chicago Alderman Ed Burke has essentially been told to sit down and shut up.
I haven't heard that.
And
before.
let's not undervalue the significance of that moment today. It was pretty clear that Mayor Lori Lightfoot went into today's city council meeting intending not only to flex her muscle by getting her preferred alderman into the key committee posts, but also by telling Ed Burke, who's running the show.
Yeah. She anticipated it. You got the sense, yeah. right, that he was going to do something and did. But it was he was trying to take. Let's talk. Do we have any audio of Burke today? Let's listen into just a little bit. Dip into a little bit because it went on for a while. But let's dip into a little bit of what he said.
With regard to the sergeant at arms, Rule 49, the sergeant at arms and or her designee. Now, perhaps the person that crafted these rules was prescient and was expecting that there was going to be a female sergeant at arms.
Alderman Burke, is your general concern that the rules have let me just ask the question, if I might. Is your general concern that the rules have a gender designation and not his or her? Is that the gist of it?
That's it.
And is there any other thing that you want to call to the chair's attention?
No.
All right, so, sir, we'll take your issue under advisement. We're going to move forward. Alderman Harris.
Ooh.
There you go. And applause, too,
and,
man.
Yeah, you hear the applause there, and that's for the significance of the moment. You know, I think listeners might be saying to themselves, well, what's the big deal? Alderman Burke was rambling on for a relatively minor point. But Alderman Burke is a master parliamentarian. He has ruled the city council and put the fear in other aldermen and other mayors by being the master of the arcane and controlling the entire process. And it's only because the feds went in and charged him and he lost that committee post that he's lost some of his power. But you see these ways that he continues to try to wield it, to try to show his influence. And Mayor Lightfoot made that exact point in
she
her
did.
Press conference just after the city council meeting. She said, this is a guy who, and I'm paraphrasing, this is a guy who plays games. And if you're playing a game just for the sport of it, I'm not going to tolerate it. And she said that Alderman Burke has been trying in various ways. She didn't use the word undermine, but testing her
and trying to play games and saying that trying to find weaknesses, and she looked at it as very intentional. Of course, the two of them have gone back quite a bit when she was on the police board, and mm-hmm. she's very familiar with his questioning and the way he acts in these matters. And she was basically saying, hey, look, we're not going to be dealing with this nonsense anymore. This is about representing the people and not playing these power games. And that's what my administration represents. And so, quote, sit down.
But the one thing that I will say is what we saw today in the city council chamber is the iceberg. What we can't see is all of the ice just beneath the surface. And Ed Burke, even though he's diminished, still is a formidable iceberg in the ocean. And he is going to be trying in a variety of ways we don't see
True.
To continue to try to hold on to power and influence in the city council. And Mayor Lightfoot has been telling allies that she's been feeling it and seeing it. So this is just fascinating because this normally doesn't play out in this way.
Right.
But it's not over.
Far from over, but having her committee chairs sail through on a voice vote, they didn't even have to take roll call today, mm-hmm. is meaningful because a lot of people said, as you were talking about, Justin, mm-hmm. earlier, that might not happen. You know, that they might be able to form some sort of alliance to go against her, the Lopez's of the world, Alderman mm-hmm. Beal and Burke, and it seemed like, you know, that's so far is not coming to fruition.
It's going to be also interesting. You know, we've got Reform Alderman Scott Wagaspeck, who has long been considered somewhat of an outsider, a do-gooder, if you will, who now holds Burke's old job as chairman of the Finance Committee. So what is Wagaspeck going to find when he moves into that suite of offices and inherits things like the Workman's Comp Fund, $100 million fund for the city of Chicago that Burke has for years successfully fought any oversight of? That's really going to be, I think, what's going to be interesting in the weeks and months to come. Are the things that we learn about that have been kept quiet for years because of the wide-ranging control that Burke had?
Right. And everything existing sort of in secrecy. One of the other things she talked about, the Mayor Lightfoot today, is live streaming committee meetings. You might say, well, that's kind of boring. I mean, who's going to watch that? It's like watching C-SPAN. But the fact that it is live streamed, it's going to be put on the City of Chicago's website. It's going to be held according to the Records Act for 4 years or more. it says people are going to behave differently. I mean, there's certainly an expectation of that. You look like you're not so sure, Ben.
No, I think you are an eternal optimist, my friend. I mean, we've all sat in that chamber at the press table and tried to cover events, and you really either have to be Fran Spielman or, you know, somebody who's done it for decades to understand all of the million and one ways that the levers of power are controlled and manipulated. Because there are things that pass through the city council that the aldermen who vote on them don't even know what they're voting on.
True, but I think it's a move toward transparency, and that's not the only one she's going to make. And I think there'll be many others. And if nothing else, it seems as if she's putting on notice, like she did on Inauguration Day when she turned to the alderman behind her and said, "We're no longer going to profit from politics," and turned and looked at them. It
Which
was a moment.
Which didn't earn her any friends.
It didn't.
Yeah.
It did not. And, you know, you have Alderman Lopez saying she's starting a war, and this is not good. She's going to need our support. She wants to take away our control of zoning, but she needs us to vote on that. Mm-hmm. And so there are many, many battles ahead.
But she won every ward.
And she won today,
and that gives her something of a mandate. Yep. So we're going to be covering that for you on the WGN News at 4 o'clock.
That's must-watch TV.
It is.
Making the city council interesting again.
That's right.
Yes. Can you see the red hat already?
I can.
Yeah. What would that be?
MCI.
Make you Chicago gotta come City
better
Council.
MCCGA.
There you go.
Okay.
Make the Chicago City Council great again.
Go ahead and start. We'll start selling those for some
Then charity. We'd have to figure out when it was great to begin with, and that's a whole other thing.
That's the back of the hat.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, Ben Bradley.
All righty. Good
Always
to be with you guys.
Always good to talk to you.
All right. Thanks, Ben. Adventurer Alex Panko just got back from the summit of Mount Everest. He's waiting in the PPG Paints green room. After Kim Gordon's news, he'll tell us what it's like in the death zone atop the world.
Made it to the summit just before, or around the time, as many some people did not. So he's got an interesting story he wants to share with you, and we'll hear from him coming up. But first, let's head over to Kim Gordon, the news sponsored by Cars for Kids. It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Justin Kaufman in with us this afternoon.
Yes,
and I'm so excited about this next interview. I'm so interested to hear what you have to say. Alex Panko is our guest. He just returned from summiting Everest. And it's remarkable what we've heard, and horrific at the same time. What we've heard just has happened there, as 11 deaths, the most, one of the records, one of the more deadly years on record. And you were there at a time when there was this line, this image, this long line of climbers. And Alex, I want you to describe to us about what it is we're seeing there. This is the final ascent to Everest, that we see this backup of all these climbers getting ready to try to summit the peak.
Yeah, right. Well, first off, you know, condolences to all the victims and their families who I can't imagine being the families of those victims. The two Americans I actually got to meet down at base camp and during the climb. So thoughts are certainly with them. You know, what you're seeing there, and I want to be careful and not completely insensitive, but we are talking about Mount Everest. First, it is a very, very dangerous mountain, and everyone who climbs needs to accept that there's a certain level of risk there. I actually summited the next day and kind of got to see some of the aftermath of this. But first off, you know, crowding isn't necessarily a surprise on Everest. The reason being is you only have 2 weeks every year where the mountain might be summitable. And of those summitable days, you might have 3 or 4 days. So last year, you had 11 straight days of good weather, and you didn't hear a thing about crowding. This year, first, we had a cyclone in the Bay of Bengal that slowed fixing of the lines to the summit. Then on top of that, the jet stream just would not leave the summit. So the winds were too high to summit. So you had this kind of condensed window. And whether you had, you know, 600 climbers this season or 400, you were going to have crowding because of the weather on these days. And this specific spot where you're looking at these pictures is the ridge between the south summit and the main summit. Best case scenario, an hour from the main summit. And the reality is you can't just pass at this point. You've seen there's tremendous exposure. It's a 6,000 foot drop, and you're on about maybe a 2-foot, 3-foot wide path. So, you know, what happened isn't necessarily surprising, and it is something that you kind of need to be prepared as a possibility for going for Everest. That being said, We were kind of aware there were a lot of teams pushing that day, and we decided to sit back another day and wait for another window, and we had a very, very beautiful day. Still a decent amount of climbers, but they're spread out and moving well, which was really important. And so we actually hit it the next day.
Yeah, for you, there's been much made. This story, of course, becoming an international story and people putting a lot of emphasis on the climb of Mount Everest. Where do you see this going wrong? Is it inexperienced climbers? Is it overzealous guide companies? Is it the Nepal government? Where do you see, if there's blame to be laid at anyone's feet, where do you see it?
Well, first off, you know, you don't necessarily want to blame someone for pursuing their dreams, but there do need to be standards. And what I'd say is there's two ways to do Everest. First, you can control two things: yourself, meaning being physically prepared, being having the correct experience. And the second is which sort of guide company you go with and pay for. And it's a reciprocal relationship. If you go with a good guide company that really cares about their reputation, they will not accept you if they think you are going to be a liability. I went with Adventure Consultants. I've climbed for over 3 years with them. I've done over 300 days of climbing with them. And also, if I showed up somehow unprepared, they'd turn me around. They would say, we're not going to take you up this mountain. Also, speaking to Adventure Consultants, you pay a lot more money for a quality operator, but what does that get you?
Mm-hmm.
It gets you extra oxygen. It gets you extra flexibility, extra logistics. If I'm delayed in the death zone an hour or two during my summit bid, it doesn't become life or death for me. We have extra oxygen. If you go with one of these budget operators, they'll accept people who maybe aren't prepared. And on top of that, they're not going to have the same level of support. So you might only have two bottles of oxygen, and when they're done, you're done. Now, as for the people who didn't make it, I'm not going to speak to their experience, but it becomes, for them too, these people, a hazard for everyone when you have not crowds, but specific climbers and groups that are slow and not moving well. That's more of a problem than the crowds, and that becomes a hazard for everyone.
Alex, one of the things you I read an article today, I mean, you're telling your story, but just having to climb and climb over people who have died.
Yeah.
What is that like? Because I can't fathom being in that position where you can't really help them. They're dead bodies at this point. You got to keep going.
Well, you know, when you go set out for Everest, one of the things that's alluring about it is its danger and its challenge. And we all know, reading about it statistically, for every 100 climbers that make the summit, two will not. Will die. And we know this going in. And my guide told me very early on in the trip, I know you know this, but seeing it is going to be something different for you. And I want to prepare you for that. And so there were several deaths before he went for the summit. An Irishman fell to his death or went missing. There were a couple others. And as we got closer to the summit, this really started to hit home for me. And I said, I don't have to do this. You can go back home, Alex. You can go back to your family. I was stubborn and pushed through. And we went the day after that line. And because people had been up in the death zone for so long without oxygen, we saw rescues. And these rescues were dire. We saw Sherpas trying to take people down who were basically comatose. Mm-hmm. And as I walked up higher, this was in the first 10 minutes of leaving Camp 4, it was one after another after another. And then there were two bodies on the way up that were still attached to the lines. So they weren't from previous seasons. And you step over them, and there's a little, first off, you're very hypoxic. So you're not really thinking the same. You're really just trying to put one foot in front of the other. But even so, I still felt a little bit of, you know, this is, you're stepping over bodies. There's a bit of humanity in that for me. You know, you're just chasing your objective and stepping over them. But we also know when you sign up for a mountain like Everest, that's a possibility. And if you can't stomach that, you're not ever going to get to the top, because every year there's going to be those.
It's unbelievable. You spent a month, though, at base camp, I read. And that's not typical for someone to do that. Does that speak also to your guide group?
Well, we spent a month acclimating. So it was between base camp and then two rotations on the mountain. You go through the ice fall, which is the most dangerous part, actually. It's at the beginning, to camp one and two on your first rotation, come mm-hmm. back to base camp, then camp one, camp two, camp three, all without oxygen to acclimate. So it's really a process, and the patience there and waiting for weather. And it's really, really, really hard. And as a client, you really want to respect your guides, because you've invested all this time and money, and you see the first window and you want to go jump on it. And thank God for me, I have a company that says, hey, Alex, you know, we don't like the look of some of the groups that are going up there. It's going to be crowded and the weather's okay. Tomorrow, there's still going to be crowds, but we know the groups that are going up. We know the quality of their clients, and we know the weather is going to be good. We didn't have an empty summit day. I'd guess probably around 150 people, but if you look at my photos, you don't see lines. You don't see mass groups of climbers because the groups that went, they know each other. They move well. Mm-hmm. If there's a slower group, they'll let a faster group pass as a group. Mm-hmm. It's very well controlled the day I went.
So you likely that was, it was just a safer day to go, you would say.
It was a safer day to go, and one of the groups, you know, just to be blunt, one of the groups that was going on the 22nd, we saw them descending our first rotation as they were coming up, mm-hmm. and you had people being short roped by guides. That means basically hauled up the mountain the first stage, meaning through the icefall, because they were physically shot already. And if you're physically shot at the very bottom of the mountain, you're not going to get stronger. You have no business being there. And then, like I said, you know, the two Americans who passed away, you know, good climbers, and I'm not sure the exact details, but sounds like they were up there for too long with their maybe some health ailments popped up. When you have slow climbers like that slowing everyone, it jeopardizes everyone. But it's not a quantity, it's a quality game again, because if you have good climbers moving well, it doesn't seem to show up.
You mentioned we're talking with Alex Banco. He just got back from Mount Everest, a Chicagoan who climbs, and we want to talk about all of the climbing you've done and talk about Peaks of Mind, which peaksofmind.org, and raising money for charity. You talked about the physical. And you read at the beginning, you talked about, you know, if you don't have it at the bottom, you're not going to have it at the top. But it sounds like this is a mental game. Because as you mentioned earlier, you wanted to turn. Your brain is telling you, turn back, turn back, turn back. How do you mentally prepare for climbing Mount Everest?
I mean, you certainly have to be stubborn. There is a little bit of an ego involved. It's also type 2 fun. You know, you're not having fun doing it, but it is fun after the fact to say you did it. First off, yeah, mentally, the whole time, all you're thinking about is Chicago food, Portillo's, stuff like that, every single meal. The worst thing is reading about the Cubs and seeing photos of your friends at Cubs games. You say, why am I doing this again? You don't shower much. You have a bucket that the chefs have to heat and boil, and you have a little spout then, and you're sleeping a lot of the time when you're on the mountain on rough ground. You don't sleep much. There are days where I'd go 2-3 days with a combined 4 hours sleep. And yeah, you just have to want it. You really have to want it. And it really helps to have a strong team and guide members then with a little bit of friendly competition, because anytime you're not feeling it, you talk to someone on your team and they say, oh, I can't wait to summit, and it gets your mojo and swag back. Mm-hmm. But the mental part, 2 months from home, is hard.
I bet. Alex, can you have a minute to stick around here? Because you have an amazing backstory as well that we want to let people in on. Talk about why you're doing it, other than just for the thrill and the sheer achievement of it. That you have a story we want to hear more about. Our guest is Alex Banco. He just returned from Everest, and we're going to hear more from him in just a minute. But let's check in with Kim Gordon now, see what's coming up top of the hour in the news.
As the spring session winds down in Springfield, lawmakers are busy pushing their key agenda items.
Coming up, the stories that matter with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis. Justin Kaufman and I are here this afternoon, and our guest is Alex Banco, an incredible story. He summited Everest over the past week. It was last Thursday, was it, when you summited? Thursday morning?
23rd, whichever day that is.
Whichever day. You probably do lose track of time, right? And just everything.
Oh, it's really crazy. Sometimes you come back from a rotation, you haven't even read the news in 10 days, and sometimes the headlines can be pretty shocking when you're gone for 10 days.
What are some of the physical ailments that you come down the mountain with?
Well, so on this climb, on the way down, because I was spent on energy, literally became hypoxic, out-of-body experience, hallucinations, wasn't exactly sure where I was, which is really dangerous because you can't mess up on the way down. No. I had a little voice in the back of my head saying, plant the foot, pay attention, and it was just enough to get me down. But then it got worse as I went down, which shouldn't be happening, and I learned I actually have an pneumonia from summit push. So made it down, though. other than that, you have no appetite up there. It's really hard to eat. Your body is burning, you know, 10 to 15,000 calories some days, and you're not eating, and it consumes muscle, not fat. So you become actually really progressively weaker during these climbs while you're acclimating.
We have a listener is asking, and you don't have to tell how much you paid, but what is the range that people have to pay for this type of, to be able to scale Everest?
You know, it's 30 to 100,000, and I would say the sweet spot for safety is at 60. At that point, you start to add on more for luxury items such as a stand-up tent at base camp.
I see. And you're raising money for a cause. We should mention that. You were diagnosed with a brain tumor at 18, and Lurie Children's Hospital was where you went for treatment. And since then, your climbing is benefiting that hospital.
Yeah, you know, just first off, for all the listeners, I pay for all the climbs out of pocket. This was a project I started just on my own to go climb. And then it started to get a little attention, and I'm very involved with Lurie Children's, so I got the idea to bring the Lurie banner to the top of each mountain, dedicate the climbs to kids, both former and current patients who are battling brain tumors, mm-hmm. since I had one as a kid. Did I even get to that part?
Yeah.
I did as a kid, and it was benign, so everything was a positive outcome, but I became very involved with them. Yeah, it's a very, very dear organization to me, and to bring attention and raise funds for a hospital like Lurie's in the Chicago community has been a huge privilege, and it keeps me going. You know, the signed flag from all these patients, I brought up Everest. Sometimes when I thought about quitting, I said, you know, I'd promised these kids I was going to fly the banner from Lurie's, and they're battling physical, mental, way more than me without a choice. So I definitely use that as motivation. So in that way, it's a nice reciprocal relationship.
You made it to the top of 6 of the 7 summits, the highest on each continent, also the North and South Pole. I mean, you have done just amazing things, Alex, and you're raising money. You're about to do Denali.
Yes. So first off, we're at 450,000 plus now. It's actually gained a lot of momentum with Everest, and I kind of have to recalibrate and add that all up. But, you know, Lurie's, it's not only a great hospital for kids. We talk about the holistic level with Anthony Rizzo, and they kind of, I like to tell people, are a Make-A-Wish Foundation every day for these kids.
Sure.
But they're also getting results. Several of these kids who I've brought attention to have a tumor called an ATRT that 10, 15 years ago would have been, you know, they wouldn't have stood a chance, and they're doing well now because of institutions like Lurie's. So we raised over $450,000. Mm-hmm. I really want to hit that $500,000 mark, and it has come from small donations from Chicago, and so it's been
thank you
awesome.
To everyone who's contributed. Peaksofmind.org. Our news person, Kim Gordon, has a question for you as well, Alex.
Alex, okay. I just want to know, how long is the recovery process once you're back down on the ground out of that high altitude, and how much time do you give yourself in between these climbs?
Normally a lot of time, at least a couple of months. I have 2 weeks before Denali, which is...
oh, my goodness.
Well, you know what? I'll be honest. It's been 3 years, and as I was joking about, but serious about, I'm ready to just enjoy some Cubs games in Wrigley Field in summertime Chicago, finally, and not think about climbing. It's been the most gratifying thing in the world. It's also been very, very, very difficult.
Sure.
So I'm really excited for Denali, but I'm definitely going to be a bit weaker from Everest. However, I will also be acclimated to the altitude.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a draw is what I like to think of.
What was the toughest? I don't know if anybody you've ever had in studio who has climbed and summited 6 peaks. Like, what is the toughest in this globe that we live in that you experienced?
You know, it's really funny. That answer depends so much for different people based on how they feel that day. Some people will say Kilimanjaro is the hardest summit day because they're not feeling well. For me, from a mental standpoint, by far Everest, simply because I did Cho'oyu to train. It's an 8,000-meter peak. It was a 4-week trip, and I was fine with that. Above 4 weeks, it really just starts to drag on you and really mentally starts to wear on you. So from a mental standpoint, definitely Everest. Physically, you know, this is my second return trip to Denali. The difference is we don't have the amazing Sherpas we have on Everest. So we're carrying 120 pounds up that mountain. Mm. So even though it's not as high, it's a very, very physical mountain. Although, to be fair, a lot of these mountains, you'd be surprised. It's patients waiting around in terrible conditions in a tent and waiting for your window.
Yeah.
How tall is, or how high is Denali?
It's 20,000 feet.
That's nothing.
I know. Almost. I could do that. Almost. Maybe not. The other thing I want to clear up, too, I kept hearing that because people were taking so long in this selfie-taking world that we live in, that the actual summit, when people summited, they took longer up there, and that is a lot smaller than you might think. In the Tribune story, they called it like the size of two dining tables. So really, you can't fit that many people up there. And were they taking more time than you would have thought?
So when you're up there, it's not just people. People leave flags in time to the prayer flags up there, and there's no fixed lines at the summit. So it's basically a giant tripping hazard. That being said, you know, honestly, when you're up there, you're so elated to be up there. You're not even, you have to be careful watching your steps, but we had people come and go. We had some decent moments on the summit with just a few people. Then the next group would get there. But it was just, you know, when you're up there, you're not even thinking about that. You're just so happy to be up there.
Alex, we could talk to you for hours. We so appreciate you coming in. We want to mention it's peaksofmind.org where you can go to contribute as you are 2 weeks away from your Denali climb and collecting donations for Lurie Children's Hospital, something very close to your heart. So thank you for talking with us, and please come back after Denali and talk to us again.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. We've got, it's time for the news. WGN Radio wants to send you on a Blackhawks getaway for two in Europe. Listen to Win Your Way to Pucks in Prague weekday mornings at 7:40 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. The news, it's time for that. Here's Kim Gordon. We're qualifying you or someone listening right now to win a trip for two. Pucks in Prague to see the Blackhawks open their season in Prague. That's coming up. It's The Real Con Show with me, Anna DeBlantis, Justin Kaufman in this afternoon. And our next guest is Alderman Scott Wagasbeck, and you should know his name. He is the new finance chair of City Council. He's been around City Council for a while, but it's a powerful position and a changing of the guard. And Lori Lightfoot, our new mayor, has she hit the gavel, and boy, things were happening at City Council today. So, Alderman Wagasbeck, thank you for coming on the program.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Alderman, do we refer to you as chairman or your excellency?
What is the, which one? Or do we bow and do we kiss a ring? Or is there some sort of thing we need to be doing now when we meet and greet you?
It's just standard, right?
Well, Justin, I think if you're still old Ed Buss, then it's probably your excellency.
Okay, good.
Oh, because we did have to call Alderman Burke chairman. That was the thing. That was the thing he did. So you...
No, you don't. I heard about that. No, you don't have to.
No. Okay.
I'm a little more laid back and nice. I'm a nice guy.
We want to get to you, your whole thing. You were saying that you want to be nicer, though. What was that comment about? You think you can be nicer?
Well, I think it was, I was just kind of referring to the fact that people were saying I was not a nice person to work with on the city council. And, you know, I think maybe what they were referring to is more of the fact that I've been a little more outspoken than some people on things like the parking meter deal, for instance. And I think people mistake my sense of, you know, what we're trying to do, what's best for the taxpayers, as taking it personal in some ways. And I've never been that way. So I was just kind of joking around that I would try to be nicer.
Well, why do they say that about you? Because there seemed to be more than usual talking out of turn, telling reporters, obviously through anonymous sources, that they weren't sure that you were the right guy because you don't work well with the rest of the council. Obviously, you know, you're outspoken to the mayor and things of that nature, but these are your colleagues. So where does that come from, and how do you rectify that?
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting because I never heard that over the last decade that I've been in. You know, people wouldn't say that to my face. So I was a little taken aback, but I figured, okay, I'll just try to be more upfront and, you know, work a little closer with people, maybe explain a little bit better when I'm trying to, you know, express my opinion about a bad deal, that here's why I'm doing it. But I think people are also feeling that the pressure of not having that power that they might have had over the last 10, 20 years. And there's a lot of new aldermen that have come in. There's a new mayor. She's obviously shaking stuff up like we've never seen before. I mean, if you were watching that city council meeting today, if you were there, it was absolutely it was earth-shattering.
I want to ask you about that, because I thought so, too. And I felt, you know, she's putting forth the Citizens First agenda. She's reform-minded. Yeah. We knew all of that. You are, too. She put you in a powerful position. And she wasn't taking it when a member of the old guard, I think you can call him, Alderman Burke, longtime alderman, very powerful alderman, was giving her, some resistance. How would you characterize it?
Well, I thought he was really just trying to play a game there as well and disrupt the council meeting when he clearly did not need to do that. There was no purpose whatsoever to talk about the things that he was about. Oh, gosh, in one part of the code here, the resolution, it says he, the other part it says her. And it is a kind of commentary in 12 years. I have never heard it at that moment where you're voting on those appointments. There has never been any debate. There have been a handful of no votes here and there, but it was really out of sorts to do that. And I think the follow up by Alderman Lopez was the same way. It was not the time for debate. If they had a problem with it, they could have talked to Mayor Lightfoot well before that, or brought it up at any time over the last 50 years that Burke was in.
You know, Alderman Wagesback, I have to say, I remember when Mayor Emanuel took office and he made a point that he wanted to sort of send a message to City Council. And he met individually with all the aldermen, including yourself. It leaked out that there were F-bombs and other things that came out of these meetings. Mm-hmm. You know, talk about that versus the contrast that the new mayor, as the new mayor approaches this City Council, is it the same kind of concept? Is she going alderman to alderman to try and get their support? Or is this going to be a different kind of mayorship from Mayor Lightfoot?
Well, you have it right. I remember when I first met Rahm at that time just before the vote, it was a lot different than it was with Mayor Lightfoot. We had a cordial exchange. She said, what is it that you want to see change with the city? What do you want to see change within the council? How would you make it better? And I think she took that to heart, and it was more of a cordial exchange. There were no there was no pressure. I felt that she was taking my recommendations to heart, and I had never asked for the finance chair. I mean, at a much later point, I said, if you wanted to put me in there, I will reform it. I will change it. I will be unlike the way Alderman Burke has run it for all these years. So we would be on the same pathway for that. But there was a cordial relationship there.
How would you be different? Obviously, there's a number of ways I can imagine, but just off.
Well, the first way, I think the most important way is that he was obviously benefiting personally through his business or other means by having conflicts with the taxpayers, you know, basically getting money off of reassessments or down assessments in the central business district and throughout the city. He was taking Rule 14s, which essentially has to abstain from a vote because he has a financial interest in hundreds and hundreds of deals that we never really know what those are about. I'm putting a full stop to that. I haven't benefited in that way for these years, and I don't intend to in the future. So that'll be a huge difference there.
How do you stop that, though, Alderman Wagesback?
You have to have people that are like-minded, that are aldermen, saying, if I get a chairmanship, any chairmanship, that I'm not going to be working against the taxpayers. And you have to put that in the code. I think we'll see that with Mayor Lightfoot's ethics changes. And you can't be working against the taxpayers while you're in a political or elected office.
The city of Chicago and the city council is kind of an aberration when you think of having someone who's a financier for as many years as Alderman Burke was. For you to take over, there isn't a cordial passing of the guard. It isn't like Alderman Burke's like, here's the deal with this, and here's the deal with this contract, and this. So how do you get over not having that transition from finance chair to finance chair?
Yeah, I don't think I'll have much conversation with him. He's, you know, got other issues coming up here. The staff has been pretty good about trying to tell us what they're doing. We are literally sitting down with them and trying to figure out duties, responsibilities. There's no playbook. There's no thing that they can hand over and say, here's how you should handle being the chairmanship or handle the chairmanship. And I think that's something I'd like to change. We'd like to have, you know, if I'm not here in a few years, I want to be able to hand it off to the next alderman who takes over and say, here, I prepared this for you, you know, as if you were transitioning in any kind of business for a new boss or any other city, you would have some type of transition ready to roll. So we're working on that right now. But at the same time, the budget has been cut by about three quarters. So I'm working on a much smaller budget, mm-hmm. and I have to figure out how to do all these things with something much different than Ed Burke had over the last few decades.
Well, and that's the thing. It feels, and you just said it, that it feels like Mayor Lightfoot as well is trying to lay the groundwork for better government for the future. So she's sort of, that role that you have right now was so powerful. Alderman Burke was in charge of the disability claims. He was in charge of TIF districts. He was in charge of finance. He's a much larger budget than what you have. And some of those things have been carved out. It feels like so that that role is not this all being powerful sort of position that it once was.
Well, I think I can look at power in a different way, too. I can be powerful in the sense that, you know, how could I be different, you ask? Yeah, the Rule 4 thing, Rule 14 will be built into the code, but I can also be more transparent. I can look at different ways to get the documents out there that aldermen need to read before voting on them, that the public needs to read before we vote on them. So we're going to look at different ways to transform that committee so that people are seeing what we're working on, hopefully much further in advance than we've seen over the last, you know, with Mayor Emanuel, where you might get 48 hours to look at something or not at all. Wow. And the same thing under Daley.
Well, so, you saw with the previous mayors, Daley and Emanuel, that they had good, strong working relationships with Alderman Burke, and they worked in tandem to be able to get things through the finance chair. You are appointed by Lori Lightfoot. Mayor Lightfoot, you endorsed her. You campaigned for her. How do we make sure that, you know, she's going to have to make some tough decisions, creative decisions, difficult decisions on what happens with our fiscal situation?
Sure.
Are you a rubber stamp, Scott, or are you going to be someone who pushes back if she says, well, let's kick the can down the road, or let's try this, that, or the other?
Well, we had that conversation, and I said, you've got to understand that if I, I'm going to continue down this path that I've been on of trying to be open, trying to be transparent, reading things, and if they're going down the wrong path, I'll point it out, and you have to expect me to continue to vote no when appropriate. And I think she understands that. I think what we'd like to have there is not a detente like Emanuel had or Daley before him. And what I mean by detente was, hey, you keep your little fiefdom over there, your little kingdom. I'm not going to touch your stuff, Ed Burke. You get to keep your workers' comp over there and continue to run a awfully run program. I mean, you guys might have seen the audit that came out. You know, on Mayor Emanuel's last day, they kind of slipped the audit out, the summary of it, and how awful workers' comp was being run. We still have to have hearings on that, public hearings, but I think when there's issues like that where we might be in disagreement, I don't think she has a problem with me voting no as long as I articulate why in a substantive way. And that's why she's talking about aldermanic privilege and prerogative as well.
Let's talk about that.
Tell us why.
Let's talk about that because she is Alderman Lopez says she's waging a war with us by trying to cut away our power as aldermen.
No, that's nonsense.
The zoning changes is the one thing that she wants to rectify because we've seen some problems with that in the past. So she says that has got to change. There can't be 50 different wards with 50 different rules in place for how that gets done. There needs to be a centralized way of doing it, but that needs to be voted on by council.
Yeah, and there's other cities who do it a lot better. If you take zoning, for instance, other cities are much more open and transparent. They tell people what's being changed. They have good forward-thinking urban planning. Here in Chicago, we don't do that. We can put up towers in the middle of Lincoln Park where they don't belong, and that can be pushed through by one alderman. On the other hand, if you have a good set of guidelines, like I think we have in the 32nd Ward, and similar to the city finances, you give people predictability. You give them stability by saying, here's a set of rules that we follow, and we're going to stick to those rules. And if we have those same set of rules, like you're alluding to, across 50 wards, and that comes from the mayor through a process where we all decide here's the best set of rules, then I think the city can move forward. It can continue to build. It can continue to, get more creative and better on our finances instead of trying to play these tricks and games that benefit certain people. If you look at the aldermanic prerogative, I mean, Alderman Burke right now has federal charges because he manipulated that part of it. And that's what that's what she's trying to put a stop to.
Alderman Wagasback, we do you have just a minute for us to take a break? I wanted to ask you about something else that Mayor Lightfoot said today. She called out the power players of years past in the city for something I did not think she would connect the dots on, but she did, and I want to ask you about that. You are the new finance chair. Congrats on your new position. And if you can, stand by just for a minute, and we'll be right back with Alderman Wagasback. We're going to check in with Kim Gordon right now, see what's coming up bottom of the hour in the news.
Your check's about to get more expensive at some city restaurants.
The Sox get in the ring with KC, and this fight's guaranteed to go 9. White Sox Royals tonight, 7 o'clock on WGN TV Sports.
He's the new finance chair of City of Chicago for the City Council, a powerful position, Alderman Scott Wagasback. Thank you for joining us, and thanks for staying through the break. I wanted to ask you something that Lori said today, Mayor Lightfoot, and I thought it was it needs some sort of context, and I wanted to see if you agree with it. She blamed the power players of the past, of decades past. She said there were deliberate policy choices that in this town that by people in power that have kept the South and West Sides impoverished, and she blames those policies for a big part, the root of the problem that we have today. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that in some sense. You know, I just kind of referred to this issue of putting up towers in Lincoln Park with the Lincoln Yards deal, for instance. And here we have a mega development going into a location that really could organically grow by itself with development, as it does every day of the week. And the city spent the last few years putting all its resources from its departments, all its urban planning content, really with Mayor Emanuel, just focusing on Lincoln Park. And to me, that was maybe an example that she's referring to, is we don't put that same effort into creating jobs and development in other parts of the city like we did on this particular deal. And she might have had a broader context that she was referring to with the leadership, but I think that might be a piece of it.
Alderman, you know, I've known your career for a while, and many people in Chicago know you to be sort of the rabble-rouser on the council. You're the one guy who Daley didn't want anything to do with, and then Emanuel didn't want anything to do with. You have obviously that's your role at the Progressive Caucus, but also now here you are with the finance chair. You've grown into almost, you are the man. You are the hunted. You are the one that the aldermen are going to look at, and they're going to be pointing to and trying to make controversy out of it. Are you mentally prepared for that change, that you're no longer the rabble-rouser on your own, and they're going to be coming for you?
Yeah, I think I am. I think we knew that it was going to be a difficult task to undertake. You know, seeing my budget now for finance kind of cut here, trying to figure out what kind of people to bring on, people that can look across the whole city and understand what everybody's going through in each ward and all the constituents around the city. I know I have to be very collaborative in what we're doing, but the great thing is I think you have a mayor finally in this city who is looking at all these different issues. Anna, you mentioned, you know, looking at the leadership, where has it led us over these last few decades? And the waste, corruption, the apathy in many cases, that's going to change, I think, because she brings a new, not just a new style, but a new energy that we haven't seen in the past. You know, the first black woman mayor that the city has had, and I think it's going to be something that people are looking forward to, and we'll see changes that we haven't seen before. But, you know, I think, you can still be a rabble-rouser in some ways because, look, we still have endemic corruption in this city that has to be rooted out. We have to open up the books. We have to show people what's been going on these last few decades. And that doesn't happen overnight because these systems and these institutions were built up over decades. So we still have to be have a strong voice and continue to speak out against the bad things that we see.
Alderman Wagasback, we're getting tight on time here, but I do want to ask you something, because privately what I hear from a lot of aldermen, or let's just say political people, not aldermen, but political people in this town, and even media people, is that we'll see how she gets this done. We'll see if she gets this done, fighting for transparency, fighting for this reform agenda. Mm-hmm. And do you have doubts that this is an overly ambitious agenda?
No, I don't. I think everybody that's a leader in this city, every constituent in the city should be moving forward in that same direction. I don't know if you guys were at the inauguration, but on that fourth star where she talked about integrity and she brought up the council and trying to move forward and open it up and get rid of the corruption. That was the loudest and longest applause that she got from everybody in that room. And anybody who was listening on the radio or watching TV probably was doing the same thing. So the people of this city want to move it ahead and move forward, and we all need to stay focused on that same direction.
Alderman Scott Wagensbeck, thank you so much for your time. I know it's a busy day, and you're the new finance chair. We hope that you'll continue to check in with us and let us know as you learn more about all those issues. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Let's check in with Kim Gordon now. The news is sponsored by Lindeman Chimney and Fireplace. Here is Kim Gordon. It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis. Justin Kaufman is here in studio this afternoon.
Hey.
You know, we've been talking that there was a lot going on in Springfield, and they're trying to get a lot done before the session ends, and there isn't much time to do it. And Rick Pearson, you know him, you love him, the Chicago Tribune, and right here, WGN Radio, just tweeted 6 minutes ago that the recreational marijuana bill is advancing. Rick Pearson, isn't that right?
That's correct. Just moved out of a Senate committee, goes on to the full Senate. 13-3 vote, so bipartisan support. A lot of changes made to a direction of how to expunge the records and pardon those that were convicted of low-level possession in the past. That's a part of this effort. Originally, the legislature basically sought to direct that those people get pardons. That was caused some objections over constitutional grounds because only the governor really has that power. And so the bill basically directs the governor to provide those kind of pardons, and it would only be for low-level possession. It couldn't be possession of marijuana and associated with other crimes.
Something like 800,000 people would be impacted by that expungement. It seems like an awful lot of records to expunge, and a process that would seem like a pretty weighty one, needing a lot of resources.
Well, yeah, and at the same time, I mean, it's part of the governor supports this bill. It was something that Governor Pritzker talked about a lot during the campaign as one not only of a way to raise revenue for the state through licensed dispensaries, but also as a way to seek some social justice here. And really, by directing him to do the pardon process, the state would get new resources through licensing dispensaries and cultivators and those kinds of things. But at the same time, rather than the legislature trying to direct all these people should go free, it kind of casts a more serious note on really looking at each case individually and making sure that the right thing is being done.
Speaking of raising revenue, that seems to be a big topic in Springfield, and
it always is.
Well, right now we feel like we're taxing everything. When my Netflix is going to be taxed, my bags are going to be taxed again.
Hold on, what's happening? We're not there yet.
Okay, that's just the governor's proposal.
Correct. Okay. And a lot of those things are still up in the air, and things are very fluid. But one thing that was kind of came out of right field late last night and started advancing very quickly today was this legislation affecting the restaurant tax that's currently imposed downtown, largely downtown restaurants and bars, to help fund McCormick Place. And now the Senate has approved and sent to the House a kind of massive expansion of the boundaries of that tax for McCormick Place.
Talk about massive expansion. It's 55th Street, some restaurants as far south as that, Irving, all the way to the north side on Irving Park Road,
yep.
East of Western Avenue, north of Pershing Road.
Yep.
And then I guess it goes along the Dan Ryan as far south as the 55th Street.
Right.
It's unbelievable. This zone would basically include such a large portion of the city that there is very little excluded from this new restaurant.
There is very little that would be excluded. It would raise about $10 million a year, and it'd be part of an effort to leverage $600 million in bonds. Part of it would be used to basically knock down the whole above ground portion of the lakeside center of McCormick Place, the oldest structure there, and build some new structure over Martin Luther King Drive to replace it. But it was very interesting that Lori Healy, who heads up the McPeer Authority, was talking in committee today about, well, conventioners, they traveled the whole area, and so we should capture that that revenue. But at the same time, let's face it, if you live in the city, anywhere you go, virtually anywhere you go, is going to get taxed. And this actually, you know, extends the boundary north into Wrigleyville. Does not include sports stadiums, however, but all of those new places around Wrigleyville and the West Loop revitalized area. I mean, it's really meant to capture virtually everybody in the city.
Rick, I didn't. I mean, you know this, and you've been paying attention to everything that's happening in Illinois politics. But this was something I didn't recognize was a need. And I'm surprised that this is something that you know we're talking about on the final days of the spring session.
Well, there had been talk about it about a week ago, and Bob Reeder, who's head of the Chicago Labor Union Council, had talked about the Chicago Federation of Labor had talked about this as something that they could be behind because it would mean, you know, more money going into the convention center, more construction jobs, and trying to keep, you know, Illinois and Chicago's McCormick Place competitive with, you know, Vegas and Orlando and things like that. At the time, the funding for this was going to come from a dollar a ride levy on ride shares on Uber and Lyft and those things. That got kicked out, and instead, as a substitute, was the expansion of this whole restaurant taxing area. And it is significant. There's no doubt about that.
The other thing I want to ask you about, and this is yesterday's news, but it's something I don't think we have the full details on, the fact that they've passed the graduated income tax and that it'll now be a constitutional amendment if the voters in 2020, if we decide that it is the right thing to do. But the details in terms of what the income threshold is, it feels right now like we're only getting, well, we don't have that many details, and that this 250,000 income number has been thrown out there. But is that solid? Is that what we should expect?
Well, that's the legislation that stands right now, and that legislation is awaiting final approval here in Springfield. And the sponsors of and supporters of putting the income tax proposal on the ballot know that they need to have something established in writing, in law, to be able to demonstrate to voters exactly who would be affected and how they would be affected. Mm-hmm. And it's the Pritzker office who maintains that anybody who earns $250,000 or less would either see a tax cut or pay no more taxes than they currently do now, and that this would affect 97% of the income households in the state of Illinois. Coupled with that, though, I think you're going to see, obviously, we've seen commercials already on both sides of this issue, which is only going to wrap up exponentially now that it's a fait accompli that it will be on the ballot. We're going to see, we'll probably see more about that than TV ads for candidates for president of the United States.
We're going to be so tired of those come time to vote on that. It's going to be amazing. Is that $250,000 per household or per individual? Do you know that?
Well, it's per household because it's been tweaked to include there was some issues involving married couples and those kinds of things, so it's been tweaked to that.
So two people making $125,000 each would be taxed. Well, if they got past that threshold, then they would start being taxed.
They would be at the current rate, and you know it would be they would be taxed at the current rate. Mm-hmm. But this, you know, again, this is a graduated tax, so you get taxed, you know, lower amounts, and so you're basically the maximum rate that for 250 would be like from 100,000 to 250 would be taxed. Higher rates really kick in after 250, and for people that earn over $1 million a year, they would be taxed entire on their entire income at the max rate of almost 8%.
And that's why I don't want to be a millionaire, Rick.
Is that what it is?
It really is. I'm not even.
So keep you from really wanting to earn
it. Right.
No, that sounds like a great T-shirt. Yeah. You know, this is why I don't want to be a millionaire.
Yeah, your next contract just asks for 999999.
Right.
There you go. Perfect.
Rick, this is your Super Bowl, of course. The spring session coming to a close. Do you expect Governor Pritzker and the State House to get everything done by Friday?
I don't. And you know, there's still things that are very fluid here. There's been very little talk about the state budget, but that's frankly, you know, after those contentious years with Governor Rauner and not getting a budget, the reason a lot of people aren't talking about it is because they think that's probably the easiest thing they'll get done after those previous times of leaving the state without a budget for 2 years. There's also, you know, still unresolved the issue of a capital construction program for highway repair and state buildings and schools and colleges and universities. That's still very much up in the air. You've also got the issue of sports gambling and expansion of gaming to include a casino for Chicago and other places. That's very, very much in the air. And, you know, as is typical, all of this stuff tends to get wrapped all together, that you can't do one without the other. And that's where it makes things very contentious.
And then what about gambling? Where does that stand? Does that stand a chance of passing this legislative session?
As I talked to one lobbyist who represents one of the gambling interests, you know, this gets talked about every year, and he said, you know, I'm tired of watching Lucy put that football up, and I go run and chase it, and she takes it away. Not a lot of optimism there. But that having been said, you know, things can turn on a dime in this place. Marijuana legalization was very much suspect, 24 hours ago.
Right, it was.
And so now with some of those concerns, Republican concerns over expungement taken away, that moves. Now, you know, gaming, again, we've gone through this how many times,
right,
over, you know, at Chicago Casino, all of that over years.
Totally.
It becomes one of the heaviest bills in the world. And now, of course, some of that revenue for expanded gaming would be tied to the construction project bill.
But
as a source of revenue for that. So if one happens, the other might happen. If one doesn't happen, then the other may not happen.
But we should expect some new taxes, and the ones that the governor's proposed may not be the ones, but you're going to need to find some dough, right?
Yes, yes, yeah. But certainly, I think you can, even though we pay the bag tax in Chicago and some suburbs, that met a lot of resistance from places where that has not been imposed. But now it's a matter of seeing what other kind of taxes are being talked about. And again, like for that construction program, that would mean, you know, higher gasoline taxes, that would mean higher driver's license fees, higher license plate fees, you know, all of that. The gas tax in Illinois, you know, hasn't been raised in over 20 years, so there is kind of a less sensitivity to raising that tax than you might find among people that are generally opposed to tax increases.
And a tax on electric cars was also proposed.
Yeah, although that early shot of saying that the electric car users would pay $1,000 a year, that's been scaled back somewhat in the latest revision to an annual license plate fee of $250.
All right. Rick Pearson, we appreciate you weighing in on all things Springfield for us this afternoon.
Well, I wish I had more answers for you, but that's kind of the nature of
always,
the beast down here.
Always. Maybe we'll know more by Friday, the end of the legislative session.
We have to know more by
we better.
Midnight Friday.
We better.
Yes.
Thank you, Rick. Good talking with
Thanks,
you.
Rick.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Yeah, Sunday spin. I have an idea for a tax. Any bar in Wrigleyville that acts as if it's a classic.
Okay.
You know,
that
like
isn't?
Every,
you mean like it's newly built?
That gets built in there's bars over there. I was just on Clark Street today.
Yeah.
And it seems like every bar is trying to do the old timey sign that makes it seem like it's been there for
But it's
10,
been there for a
years,
year.
But it's been there for like 2 months. I'd say if you do an old timey sign, it's a $50 tax.
Or use the word old, O-L-D-E.
Right, right.
Then
you
that
get that a
tax.
Lot in Wrigleyville, too.
Right?
Because if a new bar opens, you got to kind of fit the mold
yes.
of Wrigleyville. It has to sort of have, but you can always sniff it out right away.
Well, there's a bar. I haven't been up in Wrigleyville in a while. I was up there for a story this morning, and there's a bar called Rizzo's.
Uh-huh.
Right, but it's not Anthony Rizzo's.
Yeah, but of course...
Does it have a lot of pictures of him on the walls?
I didn't stop, but I'm sure it does. But the idea that the sign outside is like, it's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
This is
Anthony Rizzo hasn't
bar.
Even been around for that long.
Right.
Yeah, it opened before I think he was even in town.
Oh.
But if you drive north on Clark heading towards Wrigley, the closer you get, there are bars I'm like, when did this open?
Yep.
But it does, as Justin said, it does try to...
Right.
It does sort of fit like the Wrigleyville look.
$50 fine.
$50 fine.
$50 for every time. A new bar opens in Wrigleyville, $50.
They're trying to make him look old. You agree with that, Kev?
Yeah, I guess. But I feel like you kind of have to in Wrigleyville, though, right? Yeah. Doesn't that just sort of fit the Wrigleyville?
Yeah, yeah, you got to kind of fit the mood and the
aesthetics of it
that,
all.
That, I mean, or you have to name your bar at a number.
I don't know. I think the corner ones kind of try for a Nashville vibe. Be outdoor, up, like you can stand upstairs along the railing kind of feel.
Yeah, it's got to be two or three stories.
Oh, the attached to the new hotel you're talking about in the Zachary Hotel, Lauren?
I can't remember if it's fully attached, but I definitely know they're like the corner bars, right on the corners.
Yeah.
They all have patios, and I've been driving past them all for the past 2 months now going to Wrigley Field, and nobody's on them
because
the weather has been
raining
horrible.
Every single game, it feels like. Because, darn it.
Yeah. They're starting to creep out there, though.
$75 fine for a patio.
Okay. Contact the governor.
I don't know why the governor doesn't
You got some ideas.
Got
some good ideas. Maybe sort of good ideas.
Good.
I'm just mad they took away my Taco Bell over there. Still mad about that.
It's really getting you.
Well, there is no Taco Bell within mile radius.
They're opening another one.
Where?
I'm going to be on Clark. I think just south of. I don't think it's open yet, but not too far. But not as close as the other.
You don't go to the ones that make it look like it's a storefront.
Just don't make it look like a retro 90s Taco Bell, or Justin Coffin will be out there.
And don't combine it with like a Pizza Hut. Those don't work.
As long as we can stand
solo,
in long
standing
lines out the door till 3 a.m., we're good.
Right. That's all we ask, Lauren. We don't ask for much.
No. Anna's just looking for a gordita. That's all she's looking for.
That cheesy gordita crunch all the way.
Need some improvements I've got on my mind. We'll get to that coming up, but let's check in with Kim Gordon and find out what's coming up top of the hour in the WGN Radio News.
Alderman Ed Burke getting off on the wrong foot with Mayor Lightfoot at today's city council meeting.
We have the stories that matter with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. Okay, we have Joe from Chicago Joe on the line. He has qualified for the Pucks in Prague trip for two that the station is giving away. You can listen again tomorrow on the Steve Cochran Show, 7:40, and hear that sounder. And you, too, could be entered into the pool to qualify. Joe, you big Blackhawks fan? Excited about this?
I am so jacked. That's great.
That is awesome. It would be such a special thing to see this global series, see him kick off the season, be in Prague, which I've never been there, but I've heard it's such an incredible place to visit.
Joe, are you ready for a visit to Prague? I mean, are you up to speed on all things Prague?
I will be by the time I need to get there.
Well, congrats, Joe. You do win a prize pack just for qualifying. The four tickets to the Blackhawks convention, the signed replica jersey, signed hockey stick, and a signed puck and photo. Plus, of course, you qualify to win that trip. So good luck with that, Joe. And thanks for calling in. Good luck.
Thank you.
That is so cool, isn't it? Wouldn't that be a great life experience?
Still am holding out that they will be they're going to come in probably sometime this, maybe around the 4th of July, something like that. And I'm going to say, all staff, you can come with.
Yeah, they haven't said that yet. In fact, I've heard the exact opposite. Don't plan on it, is what I heard.
You get to go to Prague. And you get to go to Prague.
Yeah, Oprah would do it for us, wouldn't she?
Yeah.
You
it's okay,
win.
Okay, guys, I'll send you a postcard.
I forgot, except Lauren Lapka already planned to be in Prague.
You're going
to
be there while they're there, just accidentally?
Yeah, what are the odds?
Wow.
Can I pretend I was going to be there accidentally, too, and write it off? Is that possible?
That's amazing.
No, you already had this plan scheduled even before you got hired here. Sounded like a really cool trip. So now you're going to work into your plans, right,
yes.
to get over there.
Well, I mentioned, I was like, I'll be there. I can, cover the game. They're like, we'll get you a media pass. I was like, the best job ever.
Score.
Wow.
We had friends over Memorial Day weekend who are going to the Prague Blackhawks thing and the Bears in London because they're only a few days apart, right? Aren't they just like...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, make a whole European trip out of it.
Made me so jealous.
Yeah. I know, I should have just extended my trip to add that in, but we were going for Oktoberfest, and then we added the Prague trip at the end later on, and then it just so happened that this was scheduled after, and we're going to be there.
What about a Prague appealed to you? Because I know very little about it, actually. It's on my list, I suppose, of places I've heard are awesome.
Yeah, so we heard it's a very beautiful place that isn't very crowded in terms of tourism, and it's also not too expensive, because we were thinking like Slovenia, Switzerland, a few different places. And, we just ultimately decided on Prague.
Yeah, I like it.
So obviously it was fate.
Yeah.
Others in your party, the people you're traveling with, are they Blackhawks fans as well?
Oh, yeah. My immediate family, some extended
your dad
family.
Is huge fan.
But, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome.
You know what? I would still not go.
What do you mean you wouldn't go?
No, you go to Prague, you're like, I got other things to do. I got dinner tonight.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? Justin, we're going to have a top five of five you won't believe coming up. And WGN Radio wants to send you on a Blackhawks getaway for two to Europe. Listen to Win Your Way to Pucks in Prague. We're just talking about it weekday mornings at 740 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. The news is sponsored by Penny Mustard Furnishings. Here's Kim Gordon. It's the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeLantis. Justin Kaufman in for Ro this afternoon. And we want to get to the top five at five, our favorite part of the day. But before we do, I want to check in with Kevin about Ben Zobrist making news today. Seems like a lot of the Cub fandom is wondering, is he going to return? The manager seemed to be, Madden seemed to be kind of cryptic today when asked, well, is he coming back? It's a divorce he's going through, right?
Yeah, divorce. Yeah, I mean, that's a real possibility, according to Joe Madden, that he doesn't return. It is his final year of his contract, and obviously this is something that's affecting him very much in a personal way. It's interesting because his wife's this Christian pop singer. They always seem to be like this perfect family. She was at Wrigley a lot. She sung a national anthem.
He did her walk. His walk-up music was her music, right?
Yes, I don't miss hearing that. But yes, that was...
not a fan.
Well, it was just always like you hear it a million times. But yeah, that's sounding like it's potentially a possibility, at least for the foreseeable future. I don't think we're going to see Ben Zobrist.
Is he on the IL? Did they put him on the IL?
Is it the bereavement list, I think they call it?
Wow.
Yeah. It's been a few weeks now, so.
That'd be an interesting statistic. If he does miss the entire season, it'd be an interesting stat to see who else, if any other baseball player in history, had missed a course of a season for divorce.
I can't think of that ever happening before. I mean, it's obviously an unfortunate situation. You don't want to really get into their business or anything. Right. But and I don't think Cub fans should really be frustrated with him either. I mean, it is it's a personal matter, but yeah, I can't remember. Justin, it's a good question. I can't remember that actually. I mean, especially so early in the season. Maybe if it were the final few weeks of a year and a team was already out of it or something like that, or you miss a chunk in the middle of the season. But to miss essentially like 90% of the season, that would be I don't think we've seen that before.
Was he the World Series MVP?
He was.
So his teammates are probably like, this is going to be
Anthony
tough
Rizzo.
On
I mean, he's been a leader in that clubhouse now ever since they brought him. He was part of the culture change there. He's a great utility player.
Right.
I know every time Daniel Descalzo strikes out, everyone's like, where's Ben Zobrist? And it's just, it is what it is. That's the situation he's in right now.
All right, I don't want to, because we got to get to top five at five, but Ian Happ. What is the story? Why do they not bring him up? Every time one of these guys goes down,
have
some
you seen
other,
what he's doing in AAA?
Is he just bad?
He's having a horrible year in AAA.
Is that what it is? He's just not able to hit the ball?
I mean, they sent him down to work on things, and
he hasn't gotten better.
Hasn't really worked out this year, so... Yeah, a couple of people texting in. I had heard John Williams and Mark Carmen were talking about this. This is Ryan Sandberg, I remember, had left baseball for quite a bit. I don't know if you guys remember that.
I do remember that.
But Ryan Sandberg went through a nasty divorce.
And made a comeback.
He ended up coming back.
The question, I understand that Sandberg retired, but I don't know if he didn't. I don't think he did that midseason. I mean, I don't think he went on to at that time, the DL or the bereavement list in the middle of the season. That was an off-season type thing.
And to hear that there are doubts that he may be coming back, I think that's, I wish him the best. And, thank you for that update. Let's get on with the... It's... How come it always fades out for me? That never happens for Ro. Here, work better. It's there. The top five on the Ro Khan Show. Let's go. Three. Pressing the same button.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Okay. Mayor Lightfoot, her first city council meeting was nothing short of memorable, totally memorable day, as we've just heard from some veterans who have covered city council throughout the afternoon here on WGN and throughout the day, really. She made it clear she will not be intimidated, that it is a new day for city council, and she won't be intimidated even by the city's longest-serving alderman. She proposed new rules of order, which Alderman Ed Burke, 14th Ward, took issue with. He objected to the rules, saying they are not gender neutral.
With regard to the sergeant-at-arms, Rule 49, the sergeant-at-arms and or her designee. Now, perhaps the person that crafted these rules was prescient and was expecting that there was going to be a female sergeant at arms.
Alderman Doniface.
Alderman Burke, is your general concern that the rules have let me just ask the question, if I might. Is your general concern that the rules have a gender designation and not his or her? Is that the gist of it?
That's it.
And is there any other thing that you want to call to the chair's attention?
Anything.
No. All right, so, sir, we'll take your issue under advisement. We're going to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
Alderman Harris.
It's like the Kendrick Lamar song.
And you heard the you heard the applause there. As she said that, it seemed he was trying to point out a serious flaw, and it was all about gender neutral terminology, which he's never really been known for fighting for feminist rights in the past. That hasn't been, and that's what Lori Lightfoot later said in a news conference. She spoke about the incident moments later.
Well, I'd never try to interpret what Alderman Burke and what's going through his mind and what he tried to achieve. But what I've said before, and maybe you missed it at the outset, is Alderman Burke is somebody who likes to test people. He likes to see if there are weaknesses. And he has attempted to do this in the past with me, and he's failed spectacularly every time. And every time he tries it, he will again fail spectacularly. I'm not going to start off my term as mayor with the city council putting up with somebody who is just playing games for the sport of it.
Yeah.
The people in the city expect us to do our jobs. They expect the government to actually work on behalf of the people and not have a Game of Thrones gamesmanship on the floor of the city council. I'm not having it.
Yeah, there you go.
She wasn't having it.
I'm sorry, can you...
Well, look,
we live in a democracy. People are going to have opinions about various issues. We're not going to always be aligned on every issue. But there's, as my mother would say, there's a time and a place for everything. And a way to do it is to follow the rules, follow the process. And political stunts, I don't have much taste for that. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
I just don't understand the move by Alderman Burke. If it is, as Mayor Lightfoot suggested, games, just playing games, you know, pushing or testing the mayor, there has to be other ways to do it. To take on this issue about gender pronouns and
Robert's Rules of Order.
I just feel like he's a villain already. He's under federal investigation. Everyone in Chicago is sort of seeing him as a poster child for what was, and Lori Lightfoot is what is. For him to choose that avenue to be a rabble-rouser, to stake his flag in the ground, it seems very disingenuous, and it feels like just a missed opportunity. Not even an opportunity. Just a failure. On Alderman Burke's
seems
part.
Like a page out of his political playbook that she's actually seen before, as she headed up the playbook, the police board, and that he's sort of done this before to kind of needle you on small issues.
I have this image in my head of like a paperback of that playbook,
mm-hmm.
and it's got a bunch of little creased over triangles and different pages, and he's sitting there with his staff, and he's like, "What if we did gender pronouns?"
Yeah,
they're like, "Yeah, I guess it would."
Wasn't
work.
He the foie gras alderman too? He's kind of come up with some things in
that's
the past,
Nateris,
right?
But yeah,
oh, it was a Nateris. Okay, all right, but different guy.
Days like today, I wish there was a Bert Nateris at City Council.
She also told Alderman Burke, by the way, "I will call on you when I'm ready to hear from you." So it's already starting, and she certainly had the support for her committee chairs though today. That passed without any problem. So it's a new day, and she's got new reforms, and we will see what Mayor Lightfoot has in store. Checking in at
number four.
Special counsel Robert Mueller finally spoke out publicly weeks after finishing the Russia investigation, releasing his report with the redactions. The attorney general did that, Attorney General Barr, to the public. He addressed both volumes of the report, particularly the concerns about whether they considered charging President Trump with obstruction of justice. Mueller reiterated that if they were confident, his office and the investigators were confident the president did not commit a crime, they would have said so, but they didn't.
Wow.
The order appointing me special counsel authorized us to investigate actions that could obstruct the investigation. We conducted that investigation, and we kept the office of the acting attorney general apprised of the progress of our work. And as set forth in the report, after that investigation, if we had had confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so. We did not, however, make a determination as to whether the president did commit a crime.
It's an amazing moment in American political history today.
It is.
And we're talking about it coming up here, but this essentially the saying that the Department of Justice believes you cannot
indict a sitting president
of the United States. That doesn't mean exonerated. That doesn't mean innocent. They just said they don't feel in their that the office or the Department of Justice should be in that game. That is Congress's role. He said that. There are other ways to go about it, Congress. And so the other way to go about it is impeachment. And so I'm fascinated by this because it does feel that the president, of course, has twisted the words of and the outcome of the Mueller report so much so that the man himself had to get up in front of a microphone.
Well, he's also trying to avoid testifying because he made it very clear. He left the Department of Justice today, and he made it very clear these are the only words I really have to say publicly on this issue, full stop. There's nothing more I would say. I don't want to testify further. I don't want to state anything. We chose our words carefully, and it should be the end of the story. But you know what's interesting here, too? The Attorney General Barr is saying this isn't what was communicated to me, and so there are doubts about why they're at odds with each other on that obstruction of justice characterization.
I think this clears the way for a Democrat Congress or House to start impeachment hearings.
You certainly hear growing calls for that from the Democrats and more pressure on Speaker Pelosi to do that, just that.
It follows the order and direction of what the Department of Justice special counsel has suggested.
Yeah.
That's all.
More to come. Renato Mariotti is our guest coming up in the 4:30, our next half hour, I should say. Checking in at
number 3.
James Holzhauer, the Jeopardy guy, Jeopardy James. He's moved well past the $2 million mark, keeping his winning streak alive and on the brink of breaking Ken Jennings' record. Holzhauer is now within $300,000 of Jennings' record 76-day streak. So it's the money streak that he's close to matching, not the day streak. Jennings talked about what a face-off against Holzhauer might entail.
Can I have my 2004 brain back if I play this guy? I think I could hold my own against him even today, but I would need some breaks. It would be all about who found the Daily Doubles. And usually on Jeopardy, I don't need a lot of breaks. You know what bothers me is when I hear people say Jeopardy James. I'm like, no. I'm that guy. You can't put Jeopardy in front of his name. I used to be the Jeopardy guy. This is a guy who wants to maximize winnings every time he's got the chance. That's what he does for a living. He's a gambler, and he's very comfortable with that. And, you know, he's playing his game perfectly.
I don't know. I'd like to see that. I don't know. I thought it was really interesting that Jennings said, and I felt for him, that he is a little bit bummed that he's not the Jeopardy guy anymore.
Yeah, that's probably true. Like I mean, they're both doing pretty well.
Well, he said it in such a way in this interview that I saw that I felt empathy that, you know, that obviously meant something. And for him, he's no longer the Jeopardy guy.
Yeah, but how long is one going to hold an accomplishment like that in anything?
Yeah, right. You got to know it's going to be broken.
There's always going to be challengers.
But that guy, Jennings, he was the Jeopardy guy for how many years? 10, 15 years or whatever.
Yeah, that's a long time. Long time to hold that record.
Exactly. So I could see right now he's just got his Jeopardy shirt on, sitting in his recliner in his house. He's just like, he's got a sad sack look on his face.
Alex Trebek, by the way, is saying he's got some good health news, too.
Yeah.
So we're rooting for him, even if we don't have to pick whether we're Team Jennings or Team Holzhauer. We're certainly Team Alex. So he is doing a little better. That's good to hear. We've got your two and your one coming up after the break. But first, let's check in with Kim Gordon, see what's coming up bottom of the hour in the news.
The Illinois House approved some changes to the state's gun laws.
Traffic sponsored by the Illinois Department of Transportation.
Catch Living Healthy Chicago this Saturday, 9 a.m. Learn about the struggles and successes of everyday Chicagoans with health and fitness. Living Healthy, Saturday at 9 o'clock, WGN-TV.
Okay, we're in the middle of the top 5 at 5 and checking in at. Got it. Don't worry, I got it.
Number 2.
I'm about to do it for number 2.
Thank you, Orion. During his monologue last night, Jimmy Kimmel joked about President Trump tweeting a defense for agreeing with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un's attack on former Vice President Joe Biden.
everyone went nuts over the fact that he would side with a murderous dictator over an American former vice president, which led to this puzzling tweet this afternoon. He defended himself. He said, I was actually sticking up for sleepy Joe Biden while on foreign soil. Kim Jong-un called him a low IQ idiot and many other things, whereas I related the quote of Chairman Kim as much softer, low IQ individual. Who could possibly be upset with that? Hard to argue with that because it's completely insane.
There's a lot of insanity going on right now. Checking in at... Wait, let's hear it.
Number one.
Don't you dare close your eyes. Hold your breath to see.
Those with little boys and little girls know that that's the music of Aladdin. Four-year-old Madison Jade, well, she has an idea. She wants Disney to understand that Princess Jasmine does not need a man after seeing the animated version of the Disney movie Aladdin. Madison Jade had some strong opinions on the dynamic between the main characters, Princess Jasmine and Aladdin, before seeing that live-action version with Will Smith.
Bobby.
Yeah, baby.
A princess, the princess doesn't need a princess to rescue her. She could rescue herself. You don't need a boy to take you to see the whole world by with the boy, cause not enough space on the carpet. So Jasmine can go by herself, or Aladdin can go by herself.
There's not enough space on the carpet.
Nope.
Oh my God, I love her.
Yeah, I was saying the
she
same
wants
thing.
Her own space. Who needs him? Who needs Aladdin? Yeah. Boy, this Disney's going to have to change some of their storylines for this next generation.
Don't need no man to see the world.
You don't need that. All right.
That's the message.
You go, girl.
The top five at five.
Has anyone seen Aladdin yet? The Will Smith version?
I heard it's really good, actually.
It got box office success, I guess.
Not according to Madison Jade. Two thumbs down.
Madison Jade is not happy with that. You know, isn't that a remarkable comment from a four-year-old to say?
She needs to see Brave. She would like Brave.
Brave is the Pixar, right? I remember that was so good. It was really, you know, she was like this strong girl who was supposed to be what? She's supposed to do all the things a princess is supposed to do, but she was fighting it all.
Yeah, she wants to be like a fighter. She doesn't want to marry a prince. She just wants to help rule the kingdom in a very strong, you know, but independent way.
And when they were trying to compete for her hand in marriage, she was like out competing him. Remember, she jumps out there and she's doing the
she's killing it in the archery and whatnot.
I took my son to see that film, and then me and my wife, and then I left Brave to go see, I think at the time it was Rock of Ages, like I snuck in to watch that one instead. Poor choice.
Yeah,
should have stayed with Brave. I saw it again on DVD, and I was like, "Why did I skip out on this one?" I just like had my mind made up on a rock.
It is a really good one. It really is.
Yeah, definitely one of the when they started kind of transitioning away from princess stories. That was definitely one of them.
Yeah,
was it your favorite? You think, Lauren?
Oh no, I mean, how do you pick a favorite between Disney and Pixar movies? I just really like the message of that one, and things like Moana, like all the ways that they're kind of changing the image of females and strong females.
Even Elsa and Anna, you know, there's a different message there, I think. It's sort of is evolving over time. All right, it is time for the news, and it is sponsored by Tombstone Financial. Here now is Kim Gordon.
The order appointing me special counsel authorized us to investigate actions that could obstruct the investigation. We conducted that investigation, and we kept the office of the acting attorney general apprised of the progress of our work. And as set forth in the report, after that investigation, if we had had confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so. We did not, however, make a determination as to whether the president did commit a crime.
Bob Mueller, special prosecutor there, stepping up to the microphone today, did not take questions, but what he said shook Washington, and you have renewed calls from Democrats about impeachment, and it certainly made some waves. Renato Mariotti is joining us, CNN legal analyst and Chicago attorney. Renato, when you heard those words, I'm sure you were watching, what did you think initially? What would you think about him stepping up to make a public statement, and then what he said as well?
You know, for me, what I saw was
I'm sure that, folks watching had a different perspective because they aren't viewing it from the same lens. But to me, this seemed like a very pointed set of statements by Robert Mueller. He was trying to figure out how to stay within an appropriate lane for himself and not, you know, say anything that was inappropriate and yet still counteract misconceptions and mischaracterizations of his work that had largely been perpetuated by Attorney General Barr. I think he was trying to clear the record and try to, you know, clear up any misconceptions and obviate the need for him to come out and testify publicly and veer outside of his carefully chosen words, because I think he rightfully believes that prosecutors get themselves into trouble and do things that are inappropriate when they start freewheeling in the way that, for example, James Comey did relating to the Clinton investigation.
But he's an experienced, he's a veteran, and he says that he does hope this is the only time I will speak publicly on this matter. I've carefully chose my words in that report. We did as a team, and it should speak for itself. I won't say anything outside of those words, basically kind of daring Congress to say, go ahead, call me to testify. I don't want to. You should not do that. Doesn't he still have to if they call him to testify? Testify, subpoena him?
Yeah, and I think he will follow the law, just to be clear. I don't believe that if he's subpoenaed that he's going to ignore subpoenas or do anything like that. But I think Robert Mueller would like a situation where he issued the report. You know, I think he would have preferred if Attorney General Barr had just issued the summaries from his report or issued the report itself and let the report speak for itself. I think he's uncomfortable being in a situation where he's trying to combat misinformation and spin off of his report. And what he did today was he picked and chose different sentences from his report and chose to emphasize certain ones over others, in an attempt, I think, to clear up some confusion about, for example, his decision not to reach a prosecutorial judgment regarding obstruction of justice. And I think he was hoping that by making this statement today that he would eliminate the need for himself to testify publicly. I don't think that that is the case. Mm-hmm. I think that he is only going to create more questions. But, you know, Robert Mueller is clearly, I'd say, a master at investigating crime and reaching prosecutorial judgments. It's not clear to me he's a master at managing press and spinning the press and, you know, the political judgments that come from, you know, that I guess dominate the news at this point.
Well, and to your point, there's been spin on both sides. You saw the spin about how his office had already prepared an indictment of the president and then chose not to move forward with it. That had come out and circulated. There was so much maybe he felt the need to address. How much of it was that, do you think, that he was responding to? And how much of it was just sort of speaking to Congress, say, I don't want to testify?
You know, when I first heard that he released a statement, my initial thought, or that he was going to make a statement, my initial thought was that he was doing it to clear up that false report. I mean, that's what I would call it, a false report that he had prepared an indictment of President Trump. And I was assured privately by multiple journalists that that was not the case, that he was going to talk about other subjects. And when I listened to his comments, it didn't really appear that any of it was directed towards that issue at all. I think what it was directed towards is he wanted to do a few things. It was clear that he wanted the public to be focused on his findings about Russian interference in the election. You know, he made the point at the end that there was very, you know, substantial allegations about Russian interference, three different schemes to interfere in our election, and he said that those allegations should capture the attention of every American. You know, he made that kind of his punctuating point.
Right.
So clearly, I think he believes that not enough attention has been paid to that point, and obviously we still have a case in which President Trump, I think, does not accept the fact that Russia was the ones behind those attacks on our election. So I think that's one issue. I think a second point that he was trying to make was that, you know, as to this issue of court, what I think the media and the public have called collusion, that really what he was saying is that there is not sufficient evidence to charge a conspiracy. And that's beyond a reasonable doubt. I think he clarified that point. And I think as to obstruction of justice, what he wanted to clarify was that is that because of the DOJ policy against indicting a sitting president, he never went down the road of reaching any prosecutorial decisions. I suppose that his statements there could have been meant to dispel that false report that was
was out from Mr. Wolf about him preparing an indictment, but I took it more broadly as, you know, him clarifying remarks that were made by, or contradicting, really, remarks that were made by Attorney General Barr. Attorney General Barr had repeatedly said that, you know, Mueller had not, the DOJ policy did not play into Mueller's reasoning. That was contradicted by the report. Mueller made, I think, a point of mentioning that today and saying that essentially he felt it would have been unfair to reach a conclusion one way or the other about obstruction of justice because he, you know, President Trump couldn't go to court to challenge his conclusions if he made them. And, you know, he really laid that out. And I think it's a very nuanced and restrained and fair-minded approach by Robert Mueller, and unfortunately being restrained or careful or nuanced is not rewarded nowadays, and I think he's learning that.
The pushback I've heard on that is that if it is his decision and his office's decision to make the determination about whether this is a prosecutable case, whether or not you have had the ability or are limited to how you can charge a sitting president, that there should have been some determination, and that instead he came out and he sort of allowed for some wiggle room to say, hey, you know, I'm kind of signaling to Congress, at least certain Democrats believe that he's signaling Congress, there probably is enough here, guys, if you take the baton from here, but this is all I'm going to say on it. I'm not going to move in either direction. Our office made that decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, you raise a really good point. I will be candid with you and say that if I was the special counsel, I would have reached a conclusion, because I believe that for a president of the United States, the political process of impeachment is the process by which he either proves or disproves, you know, or which he, you know, can disprove the allegations. Robert Mueller thought differently, and I don't ever want to criticize a prosecutor for showing restraint, because prosecutors have extraordinary power over people's lives, and I will say that I have seen examples of prosecutors abusing their power and, you know, going beyond what they should and ruining people's lives. So if a prosecutor ever shows restraint or a sense of fair play, I'm never going to criticize them for that, and that's what I think Mueller was doing here. I will say that he certainly went out of his way to connect the dots. At one point, he mentioned the process of impeachment in a very vague
like a how-to?
Yeah, it was that for him, I think, is extraordinary in terms of how far he was willing to go. I just, so everyone who's listening to this understands, I don't know Robert Mueller personally, but I do know a lot of career law enforcement folks. I was hired by Pat Fitzgerald, who I think, when I was a federal prosecutor and served under him for many years, and I regard him as the sort of a person that Robert Mueller is. Somebody's a law enforcement person through and through. I worked with many people like that who are uncomfortable putting themselves in the political spotlight, don't view that as their role, view themselves as, you know, trying to stay in their own lane as a prosecutor. And I think Mueller feels uncomfortable putting a soundbite out there that might be grabbed by either side. And so he was trying to, you know, get Congress to orient itself without giving a soundbite that would suggest that he was, you know, on one side or another.
Renato, as we see this play out, and you have just a very innocuous way of explaining the process of impeachment from Mueller today, the Democrats, they have been struggling as a party to decide whether or not this is the path. Does the statement that was made today in the press conference, do you think that will have unilateral change with this party, that now seems like they have a direction to take towards impeachment?
You know, I will tell you, I've actually spoken to members of Congress privately about this situation. And one thing that I've been told is that Speaker Pelosi, even if she wanted to, doesn't have the votes to impeach. In other words, there's a split amongst the caucus that some members want to pursue an impeachment inquiry. Some members do not. And so she doesn't have a very wide majority. So it's a situation where I think in part she's trying to keep her caucus together and trying to proceed at a pace that keeps everyone unified. I think that's part of what's going on. But I think another part of what's going on is that she's made some political judgment that impeachment is not the way to go. And I think that, and this is just me, this is not me repeating what a member has told me here. This is me saying my view, which is that I think that there's going to be some sort of tension or reckoning on this soon, because the base of the party wants to pursue impeachment. And there's a lot of people, I think, who were moved by the statements of Elizabeth Warren and other Democratic presidential candidates who said that they believe an impeachment inquiry is the right thing to do, regardless of the electoral consequences. But on the other hand, there are members who are in, of Congress who are in swing districts who are worried about the impact of that and would rather be focusing on issues like health care. And I don't know where it's going to lead, but I think that what may end up happening, for right now there's an in-between, but you know, I think that there may be a renewed push to at least open an inquiry, if not have a vote.
It does blow my mind, only in the way that they're really dealing with one specific issue when it comes to obstruction of justice that came out of the Mueller report. And, mm-hmm. and it seems like it was proven, you know, obviously there's redactions and things of that nature, but there seems to be a lot of proof in that report that would suggest that happened. So can you make an argument that the Democratic Party is putting politics before the American people by deciding whether or not to do this? Isn't that just their job, as Mueller lined up today, to say this is what your course of action, it's your turn to do that, as opposed to playing this game about whether or not they're going to win in future elections?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I guess what I would say, I'd say a couple things about it. I mean, on the one hand, and I would say I think it's, I'm more persuaded by the argument that they have to do the right thing, because if they don't, you know, if they believe that there is substantial evidence to support obstruction of justice charges against the president, then they should act. I mean, I will say I find the words of Congressman Amash, the lone Republican talking about this, very persuasive, in which he said that we really shouldn't be focusing on the electoral consequences. And frankly, I agree with him that the conduct by President Trump goes beyond a typical obstruction of justice offense. It's really more heinous conduct than that. That said, I will say this. I mean, one thing that Nancy Pelosi has mentioned is that this is going nowhere in the Senate as currently constituted, and that's something that should be considered. And I agree with her that that's something to consider, because I will say, speaking as a prosecutor, former prosecutor, not as a, you know, any sort of political analysis, I do. Prosecutors think all the time about whether or not a jury is going to convict, right? You don't bring lots of cases and put people through a lot of drama and your witnesses and victims through a lot of drama if you don't think you can bring the case. And so, you know, part of her reasoning, I think, is that the Senate's going to do nothing. But I really believe that the process itself could change minds. And I think no matter what, the Democrats should be moving forward with an inquiry and an investigation of this. And I don't really care what it's called right now, but there really needs to be some sort of reckoning on this in terms of witnesses being brought in and the public being educated, because I think one thing we learned today is that a lot of people have not read the Mueller report and haven't digested his findings, because Mueller basically repeated lines from the report, and some of it was news to a lot of folks who were watching who really hadn't read it in great detail.
Mm-hmm. Finally, before I let you go, I just want to ask you, Bob Mueller deciding to leave the Department of Justice today, anything to read into that? What's he doing there?
I think what I would read into it is that he believes that any work that him and his staff could do regarding redactions or, you know, any of those issues are are put in the rearview mirror, and he believes that he's transitioned the investigations he has to other prosecutors. Mm-hmm. So I would say that his work is done,
and he hopes to never hear from anyone in Washington again. That's what I heard from that. Renato Mariotti, thank you for joining us. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, appreciate it.
CNN legal analyst, and he's also a Chicago attorney. We're going to check in and see what's happening in the news at the top of the hour here on WGN Radio, and for that we head over to Kim Gordon.
You better behave. Uber is setting new rules for rude riders.
It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis, Justin Kaufman in this afternoon.
Yeah.
And coming up, we're going to play News or Ruse with Elizabeth Alfano, everyone's favorite vegetarian. She actually might be a vegan. Is she a vegan? I think she's a vegan.
I think she is.
She certainly
vegan,
is yeah. going to
I'm
talk about some plant-based news
I've known
and lifestyle
Elizabeth
expert.
For a long time.
Me
I used
too.
To do program stuff with her at a different radio station, and she was a big arts person. And it's great that she has really taken the mantle. She is the person who is really pushing vegan lifestyle and plant-based food. And she's doing a good job. Everywhere I turn, I see more and more news about that lifestyle and about that food.
Well, so, she's got an infectious personality, great energy, yeah. And it's amazing how she has profiled pro athletes and people you would not imagine yeah. who have turned to plant-based lifestyle.
It's a huge industry now. Yeah.
Right, and you've seen the success of the Impossible Burger, and you've seen companies go public and make a boatload of dough because they look at the sustainability picture. So they're trying to make the interesting thing about that is she calls them flexitarians. Yeah. You don't have to be a vegetarian. You can still be a meat eater, but they're making these plant-based burgers, etc., taste so much like meat that meat eaters
she comes from it from the consumer standpoint. From the industry standpoint, obviously it's such a big trend that you're seeing plant-based protein and plant-based everything from plant-based dairy substitutes and things
right.
of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But
all
the major companies that are in food are rushing to the plant-based, I guess what you would call like sales or you know that area. They're going to that area in droves. Every company seems to be doing
right.
so.
Well, there is like the sustainability issue mm-hmm. as well as some taste issues. It used to be the vegetarian food was pretty nasty, but now they've taken a turn. And so she's going to talk to us about that as she plays Newsaroos. But we do have some sad news to report here at WGN Radio. My partner, Ro Khan, is announcing that his dad has died, Harold Marshall Khan. And he wrote on Twitter and Instagram, "Godspeed, Colonel." And he has a picture of his dad. 1926 to 2019. So God bless you and say a prayer for him if you're so inclined, or just wish Ro well because this is a difficult time and very sad news to hear something like that. So he's with his dad, and I know he's with him at the end, and that's how he'd want it to be. And we're with you, Ro, and we're going to be with you to get through all of this too. So God bless you, Harold Marshall Khan.
Yeah.
We are going to take a break here and be back in 2 minutes because we're going to head to the newsroom and coming up, the stories that matter with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.
And now, the Ro Khan Show presents News or Ruse, a true game of true wit and skill. And now, here's your master of ceremonies, Ro Khan.
Thank you, Mr. Duffy, in for Ro Khan today. Me, Anna DeVlantis, Justin Kaufman sitting in.
Ready.
As Ro is off today. And we're thinking about him. We have Newsaroos, a fabulous Newsaroos. And do we need to solicit for... Okay, if you want to play Newsaroos right now... Call us.
Yep. 312-981-7200.
You know what to call.
Yeah.
And we'll play Newsaroos for fabulous prizes. Playing with us, a celebrity guest, is Elizabeth Alfano. You know her and you love her from her podcast that is available right on WGNradio.com and all things vegetarian. Awesome Vegans Podcast, it's called. It's on WGN Radio. And you introduced me to a new term when you were last on with us. It's called flexitarian. And I had no... Do you know what that is, Justin?
I don't, but I'm sure Elizabeth will
Elizabeth
let us know.
Elizabeth will let us know what that is.
What right, is that? So flexitarians are people who are trying to work in more vegetables, work out the meat.
Yeah.
So they're on their way. They're transitioning. Maybe they'll get there in full, but maybe they won't. That's not really the point.
That's me.
It's just that they want to be healthier and, you know, get more fiber into their diet, work out some of the cholesterol, and be easier on the environment.
That's me after tonight.
It's you.
That's me.
Oh, after tonight.
After
that
today.
Hasn't started
after
yet.
Tonight. Well, I just
yeah,
I like
another,
the sound of it.
A little more green in the diet. Can't hurt anybody. Just
I have
can't
to cook
hurt.
For you, Justin.
See,
that's what
the
it
thing.
Comes down to.
I will say, Elizabeth came in
that,
here and
right.
Ro was like, all right, plant-based food, plant-based news. He's like, I like my meat. And then you brought in that awesome, what was it, the buffalo cauliflower that we were dying over.
Yeah, from No Bones Beach Club. Oh, they
so, good.
So kill it. It's wonderful. Yeah.
It really, and then they had like some taquitos or something that
yeah,
were
they
wrapped.
Had flautas.
Flautas, that's
some
it.
Flautas, and they had the amazeball, which I think Ro just kept going.
It was like macaroni and cheese and like jalapenos
or
baked
bacon. And jalapeno in the middle, yeah.
And then wrapped in some crumbly, I don't know, something like breadcrumb. It was so good. So, and then you see this whole Beyond Burger is getting so much news with the Wall Street and the, you know, different financial channels because its stock has just skyrocketed.
Oh my God. So I just looked up their stock.
Mm-hmm. Did you get in on that one early?
I did. Mm-hmm. I did get in it, but not like I should have now that I see the stock. It closed today. Up, I think, 11, close today at $97.50. So,
and didn't it debut at the same thing as like Uber, and then Uber kind of went down and it went
it debuted at 25. Mm-hmm. It had the largest gain in one day since 2008. It went up 163% in one day, and now it's at like almost 300%. So
there's just something to this whole flexitarian yes. trend that you've been telling us about for so long. We're like, whatever, Elizabeth, and now we're like, wait a minute, people, this is really taking hold, because something like 11% of Americans identify as vegetarian, maybe 3% roughly of that is vegan, which mm-hmm. means no dairy, no meat, nothing like that.
Right.
And I guess, is it growing?
Oh my gosh, yes. So plant-based meats are up 23% 2018 over 2017. Plant-based foods in general are up 17%. This is a statistic that I love. Just for 2017, so we don't even have the 2018 number yet, Grubhub orders were 19% plant-based. Hmm. So one out of every five Grubhub orders in 2017.
And that's a Chicago-based company.
Do you equate that to the ideas you're talking about with the cauliflower, the buffalo cauliflower, this idea that more and more chefs are getting used to cooking without meat, that are cooking things that are tasty on their own without it sort of being a substitute?
Yes, I attribute it to a lot of things. I think there's that. There's veg-forward chefs, which always helps. I think there's been so much innovation in the space. So, of course, we're looking to Beyond Meat. But there are many others like them. I'll give a shout-out to a hometown sweetie. Life Light Burger is also in the meat aisle.
We'll look for that one.
Yeah, they're great. So there's a lot more choices for people today, which is great.
All right, we got to get to the game. Right. It's called News or Ruse. You familiar with this game, Elizabeth?
I'm a fast learner.
You will be. You're going to learn.
Go.
And we've got Dale. Oh, I got to read the prizes first. The winner gets a $75 gift certificate for Green Tea Home Services for all your home service needs, including garage door maintenance, air duct purification system, or carpet cleaning service. I need that. Call 1-800-5-GREEN-TEA or go to greenteaservices.com. And the winner also gets $50 gift certificate from Builder Supply Outlet. True outlet prices every day. Check out The Edge, their state-of-the-art kitchen and bath showroom in Broadview, now also open in Orland Park. Okay, and now the second and third runner-up also get that gift certificate for the Builder Supply Outlet. So everybody wins. No pressure.
Prizes for everybody.
Here we go.
Right, that's right.
Dale, you're playing with Kim. Dale, you there?
Hi Kim.
Yep. Hi, Dale. How you doing?
Lee, you're
good, how are you?
Playing with Lauren. Lee.
Hi, Lauren.
All right.
And then Mary, playing with Elizabeth.
Hi there, Mary.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hey.
Okay, here you guys ready? Here's the first headline for Dale and Kim. Here you go. Man with recorder fights man wielding potted plant, plays instrument when police arrive. There's a lot going on in that one. Man with recorder.
Yeah.
Fights man wielding potted plant.
I mean, that would be enough to make me run if somebody's playing the recorder. I'm thinking news, Dale. What do you think?
I'm thinking news, too. Yep, news.
Just weird enough to be absolutely
Yay,
all
true. Right.
All right, Lee and Lauren.
Here we go. You guys ready? Florida teen arrested for launching alligator eggs at middle school playground. Florida teen arrested for launching alligator eggs at middle school playground.
Oh, man. Again, any a Florida ... story is crazy enough to be true. What do you think, Lee?
I'd say yes.
News?
Definitely true.
You're going to go news?
News.
And that would be wrong. Oh,
so close.
My fault.
So close.
All right, Mary and Elizabeth, here is your headline. Stop sightseeing, snapping selfies in flood zones. Fire department pleads.
Oh, gosh. I've seen even...
That sounds
completely true.
You going to go news?
Totally.
Mary, what do you think? News?
Okay. News. All right. And you would be correctamundo. Nicely played, girls. All right. Round two.
All right, I'll go first. Here we go. Number one. You guys ready? This is for Dale and Kim.
We're ready.
Tallahassee judge hears magic mushroom defense in pizza driver joyride case.
Oh, Florida mushrooms? News. Totally. Pizza? Yeah. All goes together. No question.
What are you going to say, Dale?
News.
Oh, you were robbed.
The best headline writers here.
So confident.
Rob. Rokan Show staff here that can write the best ones. All right, we've got this. Lee and Lauren, here's your chance to redeem yourselves. The dead may outnumber the living on Facebook within 50 years.
Ooh, I think that's news.
What do you say?
You know, I just drove through a dead zone. Could you repeat the question the headline?
And the dead is actually in the headline. The dead may outnumber the living on Facebook within 50 years. What do you think, Lee? Lauren says news.
I agree.
You're going to agree. And you'd be correct.
All right.
Nicely done, Elizabeth. Right. Mary.
Elizabeth and Mary, here we go. Man posed as Beto O'Rourke campaign worker to break into home, eat popsicle. A man posed as Beto O'Rourke campaign worker to break into home and eat popsicle.
Mary, what do you think?
Oh, boy. I'm going to say it's probably true because it's really stupid.
Oh. I'll let Mary take that. It's anybody's guess there.
She is correct. You Woo-hoo! Are correct.
Great. All right.
Go, Mary, go.
And Woo-hoo! You, Mary and Elizabeth, you have two right, so you are leading going into the Orion Samuelson round. One right for both Lee and Dale. So, okay, so chances for everybody to win. We're going to take a break here, then we come back with the Orion Samuelson round. So get ready for that coming up. If right now we're going to check in with Kim Gordon and see what's coming up bottom of the hour in the news.
Illinois lawmakers about to take a gamble on recreational marijuana and sports betting.
All right, we're playing News or Ruse here, and Mary and Elizabeth with the commanding lead of two. Lee and Lauren with one, Dale and Kim with one. But first, Justin, you've got something to say.
Sunday nights in June, Larry Potash's backstory returns. In the season 3 premiere, the story of the man who saved the game of pinball. One shot. Sunday at 8:30, WGN-TV.
All right, Dale and Kim, you have to get the... This is the Orion Samuelson round.
All right.
And you have
Pressure's
to get this right
on,
to stay in the game, or else it's goodbye.
Okay.
Here we go.
Massage parlor owner thought manual relief was legal, court told.
manual relief, huh? Well, I'm going to say true.
I'm going to say news, too. I'm
going with news.
Yeah, we're going
and
news.
And correct among them. You'd be right. Well done. You redeem yourself there.
Holy cow.
Lee and Lauren, Yuri and Samuelson one headline is right here.
Man proposes in court to girlfriend accused of stabbing him 13 times.
Oh, no.
Well, I believe lucky number 13 is true. Okay. News.
Let's go news.
You're going to go news. And somehow that's absolutely right.
Oh,
oh my gosh. Everybody's
right.
Tied up.
Oh,
but
my gosh.
But you
can win
right here. Yeah,
and Mary,
here.
You can clinch it all with the correct answer to this Orion Samuelson headline, News or Ruse?
Cheerleader accused of handing out pot brownies as a bribe to win homecoming queen.
Mary, what do you think?
News or Ruse?
I have a very strong feeling that it's news.
Well, let's go with Mary's very strong feeling.
You're going to go with news.
Oh,
this
yes.
could win it all. You sure you want to go with news?
Mary says it. She's right.
You got it. Mary, you win.
Mary clinches it. Oh, my
you
gosh.
You get the Green Tea Home Services gift certificate and the $50 gift certificate from Builder Supply Outlet. Contestant number 2 and 3, we've got Lee and Dale. You both get a $50 gift certificate from Builder Supply Outlet. So thank you all for playing. Very cool.
That was in Michigan.
Way to nail it, Mary.
The pot brownies bribe was in Michigan. How
that's
about
a
that?
Michigan, oh, hey, Michigan high school.
You're gonna, you know, that's. I have a feeling that as more states rush to legalize, you're going to see more of that kind of story.
I think so
right?
too. Yeah.
Speaking of marijuana, today as it continues, we talked with Rick Pearson, but it continues to snake through Springfield. And I was just looking on Twitter, and they said that the House has enough votes. Heather Staines in the House said that they would have enough votes to pass what's coming out of Senate. So it does look to be that recreational marijuana for adult use could be legal coming up here after this spring session.
Well, the legislative session ends Friday, right? And they had said that they were going to get it done. It seemed to hit a snag over how you're going to expunge 800,000 records and what does that look like and who should be and who shouldn't have their records cleared.
That's what they're saying. It's about, they're voting on the bill now in the Senate. So this would be to legalize recreational marijuana in Illinois. And it's expected to clear the Senate easily. And then it's Heather Staines and others are saying they have the votes in the House. And that's really what was the thing that could trip it up. And if they have the votes, it could be passed by the end of this week.
I think it'll pass.
You do?
Oh, I do. Yeah.
It's 600 something pages. You wonder how many people really read it. You know, it's one of those. Yeah, like, all right, let's do it. Yay. Law, yeah. And then you're, wait a minute. What do we have in there? Because I know law enforcement had concerns about how do you police how many plants you're allowed in a house and who's doing what. And then there was an issue with driving under the influence because a lot of people in polls identified that they didn't think having smoked marijuana or, you know, taken edibles would be driving under the influence. When, of course, it is. Yes. It is. So there's a little bit of an awareness campaign.
And there's a question, and there has been a question about where they're stopping or where they're starting with expungements and criminal justice reform. Senator Hutchinson, a Democrat from Chicago, she's on record saying this is the largest, most equity-centered bill with the most criminal justice reform in the world. So they are setting precedent in Springfield right now. So I don't know what's in, specifically what that means and what's in it. We'll parse that out and we'll talk about it over the next couple of days. But this is that was a big part of it. And it seems like that has that is part of what's going to pass out of the Senate and possibly pass out of the House, that there will be expungements and criminal justice reform attached to marijuana.
Yeah, you've heard from the Illinois Sheriff's Association, who said, how do we measure impairment in drivers, too? There isn't the system in place for that yet. So there's some hurdles here still, but it seems legislatively, it looks like we could see that pass by the end of the week.
Can I bring up another
bill? Of course.
Bill that's, so there's Bill 241 that has passed the Senate, and that would make the sale and importation of cosmetics that were tested on animals illegal as of January 1st, 2020, if it passes the House. So it was Senator Linda Holmes here from Aurora, and she's got that through the Senate, and it was uncontested, so it looks like most likely the House would vote on that as well. California has already gone that way, and I think other states, I think it's
Massachusetts.
Kind of
seems like a no-brainer, right?
You
would hope at this point any politician, any lawmaker would look at that and say that has to be on the record.
Right. The other thing is it becomes, I've found, even just doing my own shopping online and in stores, that it becomes a marketing opportunity for brands to say, hey, we never test on animals. We don't believe in cruelty. We're anti-cruelty. You see it posted even on, I think, State Street. I was walking by the other day. There was one of the, I want to say, like body shop type things that said never test on animals. So they prominently display it. And it's interesting to see that it might be legislative.
Yes, I just interviewed Senator Holmes. So that's on my podcast, Awesome Vegans. And she had a lot to say about it. So it's really wonderful. She's, you know, when you look at the states and how they're ranked for animal laws, Illinois is number one of all 50 states.
Interesting.
And a lot of that is due to her. She was the one who got it to be illegal to have elephants performing in the state and trying to move that to all wild animals that, I mean, bears and tigers. It's just awful.
Yeah, well, you saw Ringling Brothers eliminate them first, and it just sort of, you know, had trickle effect, down effect from there, that it just people started to be made more aware of what exactly was happening there, and it lost the public support.
Right.
Which is how these things occur.
Yes. Yeah.
Are you finding, Elizabeth, I think about the vegetarian movement, and I think even 10 years ago, people were like, ick, yuck, what are you talking about? That's not food. That's not real. And you see more and more people turning to it. And I know in your podcast, you interview some people that would surprise us all who are turning to plant-based diets. And I see you posting on social media, and I'll say, what?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, a lot of plant-based athletes. So that's been really fun to watch how athletes are saying, I want to perform better. And to perform better, when I do a hard workout, I need to recover faster. So I need to take down the inflammation, which means I need to take down the meat and dairy. Mm. So it's been exciting to see so many plant-based athletes, like the entire defensive line of the Tennessee Titans.
Mm. Vegan. Get out.
Yeah, not vegetarian. Vegan. Because, you know, it's so hard on their bodies, so they need to recover as fast as they can.
Is that the number one reason people are turning to it, do you find? Or is it, I know people believe in, you know, they know that there's a supply issue, there's maybe a cost issue. I don't know. What are you finding?
Yeah, so it's very interesting. And what I love about this is the topic reaches across all audiences. So you have, according to Forbes, 1 out of 4 millennials who say that they want to be plant-based for the environment. You have older people who say, well, okay, I better be concerned about my heart health. And then you have athletes switching for performance, and then you have people following it for business and tech. So it's really kind of on all fronts.
Wow. Yeah. Maybe Justin, what about you?
Or maybe work for, well, I'm in. Like I said, after tonight, I'm in. I'm definitely following.
Okay, we're all going to No Bones Beach Club.
There you go.
You got to test that one out. Justin, where are you now? Are you just a big meat eater and you kind of dabble in the veggies?
I am not a meat eater. I am a, I do not eat red meat.
So, you don't?
No. So, and I got a lot of flack from this from the Cochrane show back in the day. I was advocating. I thought it was interesting the idea that if you replaced meat, red meat with beans, this is what was going. You would see the end of climate change. I'm just saying there's a big movement right now about that. It's very interesting about all of that goes into red meat production, things like
that. You and I have talked about that, so that's another segment we should do.
Is that the way to go for the protein?
Oh, gosh, yes. There's so many alternative proteins, and all protein really comes from plants anyways, because animals eat the plants, and then, you know, so...
Thank you, Elizabeth Alfano, plant-based news and lifestyle expert. Awesome Vegans is her podcast. It's